I don't do anything by accident. When I make a decision to do something, I know what I'm doing.
I am a real American. Fight for the rights of every man. I am a real American. Fight for what's right. Fight for your life.
Yo, homeboy! Welcome to the hood, brother!
Hulk Hogan, you can go to hell. Straight to hell.
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the street. Hulkamania is dead.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
You said
you haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Welcome to episode 393 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, July 26, 2015. I am the Solid Monster. Hope everybody's having a great weekend. It's almost August. That means half the summer is gone, which is kind of depressing. And what's also depressing is this story that I'm going to have to get into here in just a few minutes. You know, it's one of those weeks where I had a rundown of what I wanted to talk about on the podcast. I'm like, this is looking pretty good. This is going to be a good show. We're going to hit on this topic and this topic. Boom, boom, boom. We'll go through all this stuff. And then you have a day like Thursday, or I guess it was a Thursday or Friday. I guess it would have been Friday. And everything just goes straight to hell. So I promise you we're going to get into that here in just a second. We got a ton of stuff to get into here. I'm also going to be doing a mid-season Tough Enough evaluation. I haven't talked too much about Tough Enough recently, little bits and pieces here and there, but we are now midway through the season. I had this whole evaluation plan of the season and everything that's going on, what happened on the show last week, a very controversial elimination, and we're still going to do that. That's coming up a little bit later. But first, I got to mention this. This is big. If you are a Daniel Bryan fan, then you're going to want to hear this. Daniel Bryan's new book came out this past week. It's kind of a clunky title, but it's called Yes. I know, what a shock. Yes, My Improbable Journey to the Main Event of WrestleMania. That's the full title of the book. The book is available right now in places including Audible. And as you know, we have a little deal going with the folks at Audible where you guys can sign up and get yourself a 30-day trial. And when you do that, you get one free audio book. Well, guess what? You can cash in and get Daniel Bryan's new book as your one free audio book. Or you can buy it if you want to. If you want to spend $25, go right ahead. I don't know why you would want to when you have this available to you. If you plug in the link, audibletrial.com/solomonster, you go through the sign-up process at that point for Audible. It'll sign you up, 30-day free trial. You will not be billed in those 30 days unless you cancel. If you cancel before then, you will not be billed. If you like the service and you want to stick with it, then you will be billed. Entirely up to you. You get one free audiobook as part of your sign-up thanks to this podcast. So even if you cancel, you get to keep your book. So this is your chance. You can take advantage of this. Get the Daniel Bryan book. I'm hearing awesome things about it. I plan on reading it in the next couple of weeks. When I do, I'll probably get a Sound Off Extra review up on the YouTube channel. So if you guys want to get all caught up before I read the book and do the review, now's the time to do it. audibletrial.com/solomonster. That is the URL to use. Be aware, there is a second version of this audiobook that is partially narrated by Daniel Bryan himself. That one is not available yet. That comes out this Thursday, July 30th. The other version is available right now as we speak. It's weird. You know, I've had a couple of people who have taken advantage tweet me and tell me that Bryan does do some narrating on the current version that's out. I don't know if that's accurate or not. I know they have a different person listed as the narrator. If that matters to you, you might just want to hold off until Thursday and get the other version when that one drops. If that's not that big of a deal to you, then audibletrial.com/solomonster. You plug that in, and you can get Daniel Bryan's new book for free. Again, lots of great reviews about the book. It's very honest, very raw. He talks about a lot of non-WWE stuff and his journey to WWE. I think about the only thing that people said was weird that he left out, I think, of the entire book. I don't think there's any mention of AJ Lee at all in the book, and I'm not sure why. I'm not sure if it just slipped his mind. I'm not sure if that was a WWE thing. Otherwise, this is a very true-to-form account of this guy's career. He's brutally honest about a lot of things. I'm really looking forward to digging into this thing, and you can do so using our link. So go ahead and take advantage of that. And again, if you want to wait until Thursday and get that version of the book, be my guest. But make sure you use our URL. You can get yourself a free book. If you like what you hear on the podcast each week, you can also make a PayPal donation on thesolemnmonster.com. Still the most direct way to support this podcast. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname and a shout-out. $30 or more will get you that same nickname plus a brief shout-out for your podcast or YouTube channel. Just make sure you email me that information when you make the donation. Thank you to the Australian Ass Kicker, Anthony Patty, Radical Robin Tom, David Sold Out Solus, True Grit, Tim Goggin, Ring Rage, Robert Young, Glory Hound, Gareth Moore, The Lone Star, Lothario, Clyde Omo Ayase, Jeffrey Allday Alexander. Thank you to everybody who made a donation this week. And I also want to mention here, I want to wish a very happy birthday to a big friend of the show and a friend of yours truly, Mr. Noah Mark, who I know you're all very familiar with. If you listen to this podcast every week, you hear his wonderful outros at the end of every show. I want to wish a happy birthday to Noah. Hopefully he's spending his birthday listening to this podcast right now. I'm sure he is. Happy birthday, buddy. And I also forgot to mention here at the beginning of the show that there will be no Battleground review here. I got the Battleground review up right away last weekend as a sound-off extra on YouTube. I'm sure a lot of you have heard it by now. If not, if you're wondering where it is, that's where you can find it. 25-minute review is up on YouTube right now of the Battleground show last weekend. All I'm going to say about that, I mean, it's cool to see The Undertaker back. Not a fan of the non-finish going off the air early. Even less of a fan of that finish in the John Cena-Kevin Owens match. And I know it looks like Cena's going for the world title now at SummerSlam. That's all good. But they didn't have to do what they did. They have their reasons for doing it. You've seen all the stories this week about Kevin Owens. I mean, I'll talk a little bit more about that when we get to the Raw review later. But not a fan of that finish at all. I thought it sucked. I thought it was just terrible and completely counterproductive. And you wonder why they have to bring back someone like The Undertaker to fill a main event spot at SummerSlam when they can't rely on the newer guys because they've done such a poor job of building people up to that level, right? That Cena level of stardom. And they wonder, man, why don't we have any more stars like Cena or Austin? Where are these people? Some of them are on their own roster, and they don't even realize it because they cut them off before they have a chance to really get to that level. I'll get into that later. I don't feel like ranting about that now. Let's just get to brass tacks here and get to the story that everybody is talking about, which is the Hulk Hogan controversy. By now, you all know the basic gist of the story. Hulk Hogan, who has had his ups and downs with WWE over the years. He came back last year, hosted WrestleMania, was named the judge on the new season of Tough Enough, and was teasing one last WrestleMania match in Dallas next year. Now, Hogan's been talking about that for a while. I'm coming back, brother. I'm going to wrestle at WrestleMania. And there's been a lot of rumors. Maybe it would be him and Cena. It was a match Cena was open to. It'd probably be a night off for John Cena. Well, that's all out the window. Hulk Hogan was terminated by WWE early Friday morning after they were made aware of a National Enquirer story that was about to break, revealing a racist tirade that Hogan went on almost a decade ago from that sex tape with him and Bubba the Love Sponge's wife. Bubba basically loaned his wife out to Hogan when the two were friends. I guess maybe that was his thing. That was when Hulk's life was just completely in shambles after the divorce, his son's car accident, and whatever else was going on at the time. He was in a very dark place, and I guess had to blow off some steam. And no, that is not a euphemism for something else, although I guess in this case it could be. Unbeknownst to Hogan, he was videotaped. He was video recorded in Bubba's home, banging Mrs. Sponge, and on that tape is where he said these awful, nasty things that are only first coming out now. Now, people have actually, some people have known about this for a few years. They've known about the racist stuff. They heard the tape. Somehow, it didn't go fully public until now, which is amazing to me in the world we live in. And all the different media websites and social media and everything else, this didn't become a big thing until now. It kind of blows me away. But there were definitely people who heard the tapes and knew of their existence. WWE apparently not among those who were aware, and so they acted very swiftly once they found out about it. Apparently, it's not just one sex tape, it's multiple tapes. I don't know if he's having sex on all the tapes, but there are multiple discs that are in existence. And the Inquirer says that there is more to come. That's what the story said on Friday when it broke. There was nothing else that came out on Friday, and I figured, look, it's the weekend. That would be a very poor time for them to leak more. They're probably holding it, I would think, Monday, Tuesday, around then. If there's more stuff that's going to come out, we'll know about it very soon. So there is more to come. That's a very ominous sign, I would think, for Hulk Hogan. It's hard to imagine, to me, that there's something even worse on those tapes. I mean, me having an understanding, you know, being a media and kind of having an understanding about how this stuff generally works, I would think they leak the really awful stuff first. Whatever comes next is just adding insult to injury. At least if I'm Hulk Hogan, that's what I'm hoping. Hogan knows exactly what's on there. He knows about all this stuff. So Hogan probably knows if there is something worse that the worst is yet to come. But I would think it probably doesn't get much worse than this. Unless they have him on tape, you know, assaulting somebody or doing something far more sinister. Hogan, in a statement to People magazine, he apologized. He said, 8 years ago, I used offensive language during a conversation. It was unacceptable for me to have used that offensive language. There is no excuse for it, and I apologize for having done it. This is not who I am. I believe very strongly that every person in the world is important and should not be treated differently based on race, gender, orientation, religious beliefs, or otherwise. I am disappointed with myself that I use language that is offensive and inconsistent with my own beliefs. His lawyer contradicted WWE's statement that they terminated Hogan by claiming that Hogan resigned on his own because he didn't want to put them or his family through this. So it's the old, you can't fire me, I quit defense. Which is nonsense. Of course, he was fired. There isn't a chance in hell that Hogan quit. He got shit-canned. He can spin it any way he wants to. The guy got shit-canned. As far as what he said on these tapes, I'll read part of it. I don't really want to get into the whole thing here. I don't think that's necessary. It is quite damning that Hogan portrays himself as this born-again Christian and then is caught on tape saying these hateful things. It certainly does not help his reputation, I think, as somebody that, you know, it's very difficult to believe anything the man says in a public forum. He's quoted on the tape as flat out admitting that he's a racist. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there who were saying this is not so bad. He said this in private, as though that somehow condones what he said. Well, it was said in private. Everybody says things in private. You can't fault him for that. Well, unfortunately for Hogan, not everybody has tapes leaked of what they're saying. Hogan had his tape leaked. Now, that's a shitty thing that happened to him. The fact that he was even video recorded without his consent is really, really bad. That's not cool at all. And that really is the basis for the Gawker suit, and we'll get into that in a second. Not excusing any of that stuff. Hogan is also partially a victim in all of this, but he flat out said on the tapes, I am a racist. You know, there is no debate here about what he said or the context in which he said it. It was not said as a joke. It was not said as him quoting somebody else. It was very, very clear on this tape what he said. He said, I am a racist to a point. That's what he said. I am a racist to a point. Then he said, fucking N-word. He says that a couple of times on there, which is even more damning. It's not just him saying, I'm a racist. He then goes ahead and says, effing N-word. Okay, there's no excuse for that. Although, again, he said it not quite as PG as I just did. Talked about how his daughter, Brooke, was making some really bad decisions. I've spent millions on her music career. I've done everything like a jackass for her. This black millionaire guy offered to fund her music career. And I don't know if she's fucking the black guy's son. If she was going to fuck some N-word, I'd rather her marry an 8-foot-tall one worth $100 million. He said this. He actually said these words. Apparently, size is still a very big deal to Hulk Hogan, inside and outside the ring. I can only imagine the meltdown he would have if he found out his daughter was screwing a 5'9" black guy. Talk about a double whammy. I could not have been the only one creeped out by him mentioning his daughter banging other dudes on his own sex tape. Now, granted, he didn't know it was being recorded, but still, this is the Hulk Hogan sex tape, right? And he's caught on this tape talking about the men that his daughter is having sex with, or possibly having sex with. Hulk Hogan, okay? Creepy as ever when it comes to his daughter. It's bad enough I had to see those photos of him rubbing lotion on Brooke's ass all those years ago. Then he goes and marries a woman who is a dead ringer for his own daughter. Now he's caught on a sex tape obsessing over whether or not his daughter is banging a black guy and how tall he should be. I hope he wasn't laying there naked when he said all this. I say this as someone coming at it from a PR background, because that's what WWE found itself in here, a potential PR nightmare, a PR calamity. It was a decision they had to make. I don't fault them for it at all. It was the only decision for them to make. You get a heads up about a story like this, which they were very lucky to have gotten, by the way. You get a heads up that one of your employees was caught on tape throwing around the N-word. I mean, this wasn't some, you know, rapper using the N-word in a song or using it with his friends. This was a grown man using the word in a very disparaging way. And guess what? Even though it was recorded 8 years ago in the privacy of someone's bedroom, that doesn't make it any less disgusting. And in a few hours, it's going to make headlines and be splattered across every news website and every newspaper in the world, which it was. You're a global company that employs plenty of African Americans. You cater to lots of African American fans all over the world. Even the non-African American fans. You don't have to be black to be offended by this. You need to get as far away from that person as possible. Make it very clear you do not condone that type of thing at all. This has nothing to do with the PC police. I'm just waiting for those people to come out. Oh, what a politically correct world we live in. We do. Disgustingly so. I'm with you 100%. That has nothing to do with any of this at all. There is no defending what the man said. Nor is there any question he said it since he's since come out and apologized for it, thereby admitting that it happened. So we can forget debating whether or not this is even legit. He admits that it is. It did happen. And that was very smart of Hogan to do that. To get out in front of this, because he could have denied the whole thing and made things even worse. He got out in front of it. He said, look, I made a mistake. This is not who I am. If I were him, I'd be all over every television show, every radio show. I would want to be out there apologizing for what happened. He's going to be apologizing for a long time. He better make it part of his new daily routine. Wake up, take a leak, take my Hulk Hogan vitamins, and apologize. That's going to be his new routine for the foreseeable future. But WWE absolutely did the right thing when it comes to cutting all ties with him. They had to. It was their only option. Now, the privacy issue is a big one. Okay, Hulk Hogan was in the privacy of, I guess, someone else's home, not his own. But the fact is, he was in private. He said these things in confidence, not expecting them to ever be broadcast to the entire world. That's why he and Gawker are in the middle of this major lawsuit. It's a right to privacy issue. Gawker got the sex tape. They posted about a minute of it. This was several years ago. And they refused to take it down. They cited its newsworthiness and people having a right to know since he's a celebrity. And he's publicly talked about his sexual conquests before. So, therefore, people have a right to know. That's their position. Hogan claims otherwise. He said, I never consented to being recorded, nor did I consent to Gawker airing the clip. And so here we are. Here's the thing Hogan needs to understand, okay? You are a public figure. And we live in a world where people carry tiny little GPS devices with video cameras in their pockets everywhere they go. Grandmothers, small children, carry smartphones in their pocket wherever they go. You need to be on guard 24 hours a day. That's just how it is. And the iPhone didn't even exist when that sex tape was made. Or at least it wasn't released to the public. The iPhone wasn't even a thing. But he's still a public figure, and he must have been awfully comfortable with that woman to let his guard down that much that he would say something like that to anyone outside of his own home. It's fucked up that the thing got taped and that the tape got leaked without his consent. That's not cool. And I do think Gawker's in a lot of trouble. And if Hogan wins, which there's a very good chance he will, he could bring that entire website down for good. The future of Gawker is really hanging in the balance here with this lawsuit. But you ask yourself, at what cost? Even if he wins, right? Okay, he wins. He wins a $100 million judgment. But at what cost? Because he was the one who filed the lawsuit. He didn't want to settle this out of court because he felt he was wronged, which he was. Now that's coming back to bite him on the ass, and it's ruined his reputation. I mean, the guy is just toxic. He's poison right now. He is tainted for life. This will be part of his legacy, no matter what kind of comeback he may be able to put together for himself in a few years. This will be part of his legacy. The damage is done. But him filing that lawsuit, that's why this stuff got leaked. And his lawyer is trying to find out if Gawker were the ones behind the leak. Gawker denies it. They said they had nothing to do with this stuff leaking. Hogan's lawyer seems to think otherwise, and if they can prove it, he flat out said that we're taking this website down for the count. I mean, you know, think about it. If he would have settled this out of court, none of this would be happening right now. But the fact is, he had every right to sue, and now he's got to deal with the consequences of that. Any monetary judgment he wins cannot make up for the damage that he did to himself here. He fucked up. In more ways than one. He fucked up big time. And, you know, I don't want to hear that, oh, it was so long ago, Solomonster. You know, like he was some young, naive kid when the thing was recorded. He was 52 years old when that tape was made. He's now 61. He knew what he was saying. He knew exactly what he was doing. He knows the difference between right and wrong. I don't want to hear otherwise. And now he's got to pay a heavy price for it. And trust me, he needs that WWE money. I mean, he really took a hit this week. He got slammed in the divorce. 70% of his assets went to his ex-wife. He needs that WWE money. And he's not getting it anymore. At least for the lifestyle that he lives. He needs that WWE money. I'm sure Hulk Hogan could get by just fine on what he already has living in a tiny apartment somewhere. But that's not Hulk Hogan's style. Hulk Hogan is not going to move into a tiny one-bedroom apartment somewhere. And he's going to take a real hit now because he just will not have those checks coming in anymore. Now, I said this to Joey Numbers of Wrestling Soup on our Facebook page because he talked about how all he had to do was stay out of trouble, keep his mouth shut. That's it. He was made, he was Teflon. He was a made man. He was in the perfect role. He was this great ambassador for the company, this great ambassador for wrestling. And all he had to do was keep his mouth shut. Don't say anything that's going to get himself in trouble. If you are a public figure, you should know better than to use the N-word, okay? Even in private, even if that's how you really feel, nothing good can come from that word leaving your lips. Ever. Do you remember those jailhouse recordings I played on the show many years ago with Nick Hogan? On the phone, whining and complaining to his parents about being locked up. Okay, his son was drag racing. Hulk Hogan's son was drag racing. Under the influence, mind you. And he wrecked his car. And his friend, John Graziano, who was in the passenger seat, he was badly, badly injured. And there's Hogan talking to his son on this jailhouse recording, effectively blaming the friend for what happened to him. He was a negative person, and so I guess bad karma, right? Bad things happen to bad people. This kid is a vegetable for the rest of his life. But it's not Nick's fault. Oh, no. Nope. It's John's fault. Now, granted, John was not wearing his seatbelt. So he's not completely innocent in what happened to him. But that's not the point. When I first listened to that, and this goes back about 5 years, and I played this audio on the sound off at the time, when I listened to that, it made me so angry. And my whole view, I mean, we already know Hogan was full of shit whenever he would talk about anything really in public. The guy talks out of both sides of his mouth. You never know what you're going to get when this guy speaks. How can you believe anything that comes out of this guy's mouth? He already had that reputation. Everything with this guy was a work. Everything with this guy was exaggerated to the nth degree. We already knew that. But when I heard those jailhouse tapes with him and Nick and Linda and Nick, it changed my whole view of that whole family. And not in a good way. It made me so angry when I first heard that. And his son on these tapes is so devastated by what happened. He's so concerned about what just happened to his friend. All he could do is tell his father to find him the best reality TV deal he could so that when he gets out, he can make the most money. Reality. I remember these tapes like it was yesterday. Reality. They're already talking about what to call the show, the new Nick, all this. And I'm listening to this and like my skin is crawling. The whole idea of following a celebrity just out of jail on their road to redemption. They had this whole thing mapped out. right after everything happened. You listen to that and you see what kind of people you're dealing with here. So when I see people asking, why, Hulk, why? How could you be so stupid? Because bad judgment is like an incurable disease that runs in that family. That's why. And I'll give you another reason why none of this should be all that surprising. Because the man made a career out of being something he's not. He lies the way that you and I breathe oxygen. I can't ever tell. Like I just said, I can't ever tell if we're getting Hulk Hogan or we're getting Terry Bollea. I'm not even sure there's a difference. I don't even know that Terry Bollea exists anymore. They've become one and the same. The man's entire life has been one giant work. The guy built his reputation off, say your prayers, eat your vitamins, don't do drugs. Great message to kids. I'm not saying it's not. But obviously the vitamins he was taking were a little bit different. He's far from the only wrestler to say one thing in public and do another in private. But, you know, we put these guys up on a pedestal, and then we act surprised when we hear stuff like this. Oh my God, I can't believe this. How could something, this is Hulk Hogan, this is the guy from my childhood. How could something like this happen? This stuff doesn't shock me anymore. It's disappointing, but it's not surprising. And I say this as somebody who grew up a Hulk Hogan fan. I grew up right in that period, the rock and wrestling, Hulkamania boom period. Okay, I was right in there with a lot of other people. I hate to see what the man has become. I really do. I hate to see it. Between the divorce, the 9 back surgeries where he could barely move, all the other scandals, now this. I mean, look, I was in Madison Square Garden this year, okay, in February of this year, for Hulk Hogan Appreciation Night. They raised a banner in his honor in the garden. They had Jimmy Hart was there, Ric Flair was there, the NWO, Triple H. Everybody came out to pay tribute to Hogan and all of his classic matches in that building. It was very, very well done. It was a fun time. I was happy to be there. Okay, I bought a ticket to go to that. I am still, on some level, a Hogan fan. You know, it's hard to forget that. It's hard to forget all that stuff. Growing up as a kid, Hogan Andre, the Mega Powers, Hogan and Warrior, on and on and on. I grew up on that stuff. I still love watching it. I can go on the network right now and watch it. I wouldn't have a problem. It's hard. It's hard to see someone rise so high and fall so hard, because the bigger star that you are, the farther the distance you have to fall. If Jim the Anvil Neidhart falls off the wagon, and he's had his own issues before, if Jim the Anvil Neidhart falls off the wagon and we hear about, oh, he's in a dark place. I mean, first of all, we've heard stories about him before anyway, but it's like, ah, that's what a sad story, right? But it's Jim Neidhart. He was a star, but he wasn't a humongous star. A guy like Hulk Hogan, in a situation like this, he's going to fall a lot further than somebody like Jim the Anvil Neidhart would. Because people looked up to this guy. This guy was like a hero. He was a hero. He was a hero to kids. He was a great guy. He's the Hulkster. People love dressing up like him. Every week at TV, every Halloween, all you see Hulk Hogan costumes everywhere. And so it's hard to see somebody like that fall so far. But I'm not going to sit here and make excuses for what he did, because he's Hulk Hogan. Just because of who he is. Who gives a shit? I don't care who he is. He's not all that he makes himself out to be. And people need to understand that so that they're not so goddamn shocked when something like this happens. Now, WWE, you know, they did what they had to do. If I were them, I would have done the exact same thing. Cut bait, don't look back. I do think he will be back one day. People have asked me that. Do you think he's completely done? And no, I think he will be back one day. He'll recover from this scandal. It may take a few years. He will recover from this, and I do believe he'll be back in WWE. This is not the last we've seen of Hogan there, unless he drops dead in the next couple of years, God forbid, or something. He will be back. But it's going to be a long time. It's not going to happen next year. It's not going to happen the year after. And he's not getting any younger. He's already in his 60s. I don't think this will ever fully blow over. Again, people are not going to ever forget about this. This will always be there. This will always taint him. When it comes to racist rants, you could come back from that, but people don't forget. You know, it wrecked Mel Gibson's career. He's never recovered from it. It wrecked whatever career Michael Richards had left. Right? Kramer from Seinfeld. He's out there doing stuff now, but you think the name Michael Richards, you immediately think of the fucked up things that he said in that comedy club. That will follow him to his grave. when it comes to race, that shit sticks to you for life. That being said, do I think he should be, you know, removed from the Hall of Fame? No, I don't think he should be removed. I think that's ridiculous. They took him off the website. That doesn't mean he's out of the Hall of Fame. There's people freaking out. They took Hulk Hogan out of the Hall of Fame. How dare they? They didn't take Hulk Hogan out of the Hall of Fame. They took him off the website. So for all the people I saw complaining about that, the people that run the website were told late Thursday night, early Friday morning, scrub all mentions on the site as quickly as you can. Anything related to Hulk Hogan. That included the Hall of Fame page. That included the Tough Enough page, the Superstar Bios page, you know, the alumni page, all that stuff. It was one sweeping, get him off there so we can have time to kind of think things through. So they haven't even made a decision yet about what they're going to do as far as the Hall of Fame is concerned. Right now, he's still in there. Could that change? Yeah, I guess it could change. But I don't think it will. So just calm down. People just freaking out about that. It's a freaking web page. I mean, I know pretty much the Hall of Fame, that's all it is really, is a web page. It doesn't really exist anywhere except on the web. But no, they did not take Hulk Hogan out of the Hall of Fame. They did take his Rock and Wrestling cartoon off the network, and they just added, they just added all those episodes, and now they're gone. They're not going to blur his face on his matches or anything like that. They are going to have a very big problem come next year's WrestleMania, when they do all those WrestleMania video packages, Hogan slamming Andre, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. I say good luck with that. 2K has taken him out of the next video game, 2K16. There will be no Hulk Hogan or Hollywood Hogan anywhere in the game. They are doing what they feel they have to do to distance themselves from this mess because it's the world we live in. They don't need or want the bad publicity, and I do not fault them for it at all. The guy is toxic. They need to stay the hell away from him. I see Ric Flair is one of the names being rumored to replace Hogan on Tough Enough. I'm hearing Bret Hart is a possibility as well, but Ric Flair seems to be the running top name right now. We won't know until Tuesday. The irony of that is amusing to me. All I could think when I hear that is, you know, what Teddy Long must think, seeing as how Teddy Long has told stories in, I think it was in his Shoot interview with Kayfabe Commentaries, or maybe a U-Shoot, whatever it was, about Ric Flair being a racist and using the N-word on him many times back in the day. So if Ric Flair ends up replacing Hulk Hogan because of Hulk Hogan's racist rant, I think there's a lot of irony in that. I want to say one last thing here, and then we'll move on to more important matters. I see a lot of mainstream websites, not just wrestling websites, it's all over Twitter, but a lot of mainstream sites now have picked up on that Survivor Series clip of Vince McMahon using a variation of the N-word on John Cena. The version that ends with the letter A and not ER. There is a difference there, a very big difference I think people are missing when it comes to those two words. One is a form of hate speech, and the other is a slang term that people, many of whom are African-American, use as a term of endearment amongst their friends. Okay, that doesn't make it right. I still think it's fucked up, personally. But that's a major distinction that I think people need to make. You can't just be like, oh, it's all the same. No, it's not all the same. You can't just sweep it under the rug. Oh, it's all the same. It's the same word. It's not the same word. All right, cut the crap. It's not the same word. They actually just had a scene like that on The Rock Show, Ballers, a few weeks ago. Rob Corddry blurted out that word, and he got his ass tossed off a yacht for it because he's white. He's a white dude. Note to white people, do not use that word. It does not make you look cool. It makes you sound ignorant and out of touch, which is exactly how it made Vince McMahon look in that clip. I'm pretty sure that was by design. The difference here is that was a scripted television skit that was intended for comedy. It was bad comedy, but it was still done for comedy. Okay, just like Roddy Piper painting himself half black, or the Mexicools riding to the ring on lawnmowers. Believe me, WWE has its own history to answer for when it comes to racist shit. Not just on camera, by the way, behind the scenes as well. They are not an innocent party when it comes to racism. Not at all. They would argue, oh, well, that stuff was done for, you know, in the name of entertainment. I think the only thing like that that they've ever done that I actually did find entertaining, and I admit I still do, I can't help it, Akeem the African Dream. You will never convince me that Akeem was not entertaining. The sight of this 400-pound white guy wearing spandex with a picture of Africa on his back, as though he couldn't tell what it was. It said Africa on it, dancing about as horribly as I've seen a human being dance. That will never not be funny to me. I say let's put Akeem aside here. He's the lone exception. None of this means that WWE should be let off the hook for being hypocrites. People are saying they're hypocrites because of what I just mentioned, right? All the racist stuff they've done. Put that on the side for a second. I'm not even talking about that. They should not be let off the hook for being hypocrites for a different reason. When in the same statement where they announced they were terminating Hogan, they also said WWE is committed to embracing and celebrating individuals from all backgrounds as demonstrated by the diversity of our employees, performers, and fans worldwide. Boy, doesn't that sound great? Forget the fact that Michael Hayes is still employed by WWE, a man who has thrown that word around before and gotten in trouble for it, okay, with Mark Henry. And by the way, Mark Henry put a statement out on his Twitter where, for the first time I can remember publicly, he acknowledged the fact that he's had racial issues with WWE before, and he works for them. But Hayes has had issues with using that word in front of Mark Henry and allegedly with Bobby Lashley. That has about as much to do with anything as the reason that Bobby Lashley left WWE and I think got a full release, because that could have turned out a lot worse for the company than it was. Okay, they still employ Michael Hayes. He's been there for how many years? And in an executive position, no less. Never fired. He's been suspended. Right? There are things he's done. He's gotten in trouble for it, but never fired. That statement that they put out sounds great on paper. Here's where it all falls apart. And some people are not going to like this because they portray this guy now as this great hero. That's the narrative. Right? But for them to distance themselves from Hulk Hogan and embrace the Ultimate Warrior the way they did last year and market him for the Hall of Fame really is the ultimate act of hypocrisy. And I see very few people, some people, but I see very few people pointing to that. All I see is the stupid Vince McMahon clip of him trying to be funny. And I just shake my head because now that's spread like wildfire and that's all anybody is talking about, and you're completely missing the point. There's a much more serious point to be made here, and you're not making it because you're too busy circulating some dumb shit YouTube clip. Look at the Warrior. Okay, this guy, he died last year. And everybody said great things about him. I think I was complimentary of him as I could be on my own show because, you know, look, the guy just died, right? You're not going to pile on. Well, it's been almost a year and a half now. I think enough time has gone by where we can be adults and we can look at this for what it really is. Because even though the Warrior has never been caught on tape using the N-word, to my knowledge, he has said plenty of hateful, nasty, homophobic things. And they built a goddamn statue of the guy. He was pissed that Martin Luther King Jr. had a holiday dedicated to him and George Washington didn't. He only marched 40 miles and had a security escort the whole time. That's what he said about Martin Luther King Jr. The man ended up shot dead. I can't imagine why he would want to have security with him. He once referred to Draws. You remember Draws, right? Very sad what happened to him. WWE had him co-hosting their web show Bite This for a while that they used to do. It was Draws and Todd Grisham. He referred to Draws as the cripple, and he referred to Grisham as the queer. What a swell guy. Grisham now is with ESPN. He's happily married, by the way. He has a kid. Or about the time that he told a college crowd the Warrior did, right? Queers, and again, that's his word. They're not as legitimate as heterosexual people. That's what he said. All the while, WWE has this partnership with GLAAD. He once celebrated the fact that Bobby Heenan was dying of cancer. And you know how I feel about Bobby Heenan. I'm the biggest Bobby Heenan fan you'll find. Celebrated the fact that this guy was suffering and dying from cancer. The irony there, of course, is that Bobby Heenan ended up outliving the Ultimate Warrior. I find that kind of funny. The stuff about Hurricane Katrina killed almost 2,000 people in New Orleans, the same city where this guy was inducted into the Hall of Fame last year. He insulted the people who lived there. He called New Orleans a cesspool. And he called all the people there fat. So many fat people, he said. Just to pile on. And that's only a few examples. I can go on. Not only did they induct this guy into their Hall of Fame, they named an award after him. And they built that bronze statue. When you walk into Titan Tower, it's the first thing you see is that Ultimate Warrior statue. They ought to build a Hogan statue and sit it across from the Warrior one. So if you're looking for a reason to point at WWE and yell hypocrite, There's your reason. Not some stupid comedy segment on YouTube. So at the end of the day, Hogan has nobody to blame for this but himself. It's shitty what happened to him in terms of the stuff getting leaked. He's a small victim in all this. I feel maybe a little bit sorry for him in that respect, but really, overall, I don't feel sorry for him at all. He made his bed. He should know better. He's been in the public eye his entire life. He's got to live with the consequences now. It's going to cost him a lot of money. His reputation is forever tainted until the day he dies. And that's just something he has to deal with. That's not WWE's fault. That's not anybody's fault but his own. And that's something that he has to live with now. Now let's transition over here to Tough Enough. I had planned to do this before all the Hogan stuff broke anyway. We are at the midway point of the season now. 5 episodes down with 5 to go. I've stuck with it. I've been watching. So I thought now would be a good time to look at the show. Look who's left. The good, the bad. And who's likely winning the whole thing. First things first, this live-to-tape format, live-to-tape-to-live, they go back and forth between the studio and the footage from the barracks and then back to the studio. Switching back and forth like that, it just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. I know they wanted to have the live aspect in there. They wanted the fan voting, the fan interaction. That's what all these so-called reality shows now are all about these days. But it just, in this format, it just doesn't work. The ratings reflect that. The ratings have been terrible. They improved a little bit this past week, but this show has been a bust so far. In hindsight, Steve Austin should be very happy that he couldn't do the show, because even if, you know, he did, even Steve Austin, I don't think, could have saved it. Not with this format. Jericho as the host is just a total waste, which is not a knock on Jericho. It's just a waste of his talents. He could be doing more, and he's basically a frickin' game show host. Jericho hosted an actual game show once on ABC, and all of 5 episodes aired before it was canceled. Okay, so it's not the role for Chris Jericho. You put Steve Austin in that same role on this show, and trust me, it's not doing any better. Because it'd be a total waste of Austin's talents. One of the greatest things about that last season of Tough Enough in 2011 was the final few minutes of each episode, where Steve Austin got 3 people in the ring, and he stared them down, and he just went back and forth with them. And sometimes he just went and just railed on them, and it could be funny, it could be intense. Apparently, some of those segments could go a full hour, or even 2 hours. Of course, they edited it down to like 5 minutes, but they had the executive producer for Lucha Underground was on Austin's podcast a few weeks ago, and he, I believe, had worked with Austin before on that first season, not the first season, but that last season of Tough Enough, and he was saying, you know, Steve, you remember, some of those segments would go 2 hours. You'd be in the ring with those kids, and we had to edit it down. I mean, Austin went all in on that stuff. That was the most entertaining part of every episode. And we don't even have that. You know, it comes down to the judges here, and it's like, eh, whatever. I mean, you know, there's nothing really entertaining about what we're seeing. So that right there has been the biggest flaw of the show and why it's not doing well. That and the fact that in the history of Tough Enough, ask yourself this question. How many winners have gone on to become a big deal in WWE? John Morrison. That's it. One guy in the history of the show. And you could argue that even he never really made it to a high level in WWE. The guy was upper mid-card at best. Not in terms of his talents, but just in terms of how he was positioned. The show has a terrible track record of making new stars. The Miz and Ryback, they were on the same season together. They both went on to become stars, although, you know, I don't give Tough Enough much credit for Ryback's success. I mean, he didn't win the show. They signed him anyway, then they fired him. He worked his ass off. He came back. With his look and his size, believe me, he was going to get a chance in WWE no matter what. But the show itself has been a bust over the years. So why would people think that this season would be any different? Can you really blame them? I think if people really believed that this show was going to be a big deal, and they had found a couple of guys over the years that went on to become main event players, the show would be doing better. People would take it more seriously. Does anybody believe that any of these people are going to win Tough Enough and transition to TV right away and make an impact? Is there anybody left on that show who you look at and say, this person, if they win, could be on TV right away, or they could be on TV even in 6 months and really make an impact on Raw or SmackDown? The one guy who might have had the best shot of being put on TV pretty quickly and doing something meaningful was Patrick. Because Patrick got it. Patrick was already wrestling on the indies. Like, he gets it. And Patrick got booted off the show last week. Mick Foley, I thought, said it best on his Facebook page. He said he's done with the show after this week because Tough Enough, for him to look at Tough Enough as being relevant, they needed to have somebody who could step onto the main roster within 1 year's time. Now, I would disagree and say that's even too long. They need to be able to capitalize off all this TV time they're giving these people and get them on TV in 6 months or less. That's what I say. Foley said he sees people with promise that's left on the show, but they're all long-term projects. Patrick was the real deal, and now he's gone. And I agree with him 100%. I think it's completely ludicrous that not one of the judges, not Daniel Bryan, not David Duke, Hulk Hogan, and not Paige, not a single one of them opted to use their save on Patrick. Each judge gets one save for the entire season. None of them have used their saves yet, and they opted not to use it on the one guy who won challenge after challenge after challenge. He killed it on his promo on Tough Talk the week before. You know, he didn't do so great on Tough Enough, but then they have that Tough Talk show, and he cut a hell of a promo. The one guy who has actual product knowledge and seems to actually want this and seems to actually want to be there, the one guy who is making use of social media, right? They have Twitter accounts set up for all of the Tough Enough people. And he was the one guy who was just, you know, he was very active on social media, probably more than any of the other contestants. He was periscoping, you know, all that kind of stuff that WWE loves to see. They're big into social media. I mean, all of that stuff. He was doing it. Apparently, that wasn't good enough. Now, I know it was the fans who actually voted him off, but the fans didn't put him in the bottom three. They did. Now, that brings me to Tough Talk. Tough Talk continues to be a far superior show to Tough Enough each week. This week may have been the best one yet because as great as I think The Miz has been hosting that show, he was even better this week. He was just giving it to Hulk Hogan, giving it to Paige on that Patrick elimination. I mean, Miz seemed legit shocked and bothered by the fact that Patrick was even in the bottom three, let alone the fact that he got booted off. He kept talking over Hogan. Hogan was trying to explain why he felt the way he felt about Patrick. I guess in light of recent events, maybe that sheds a little more light on that. But he just kept talking over Hogan. He wouldn't let it go. I mean, he was really giving it to him. Paige was actually the one who put Patrick in the bottom three. It wasn't Hogan. Because Patrick, look, the way they edited the show, the guy came off as a total dick. Okay, I admit that. No doubt about it. Came off very unlikable the past few weeks, completely full of himself. And WWE likes to, when they have somebody like that, or someone who they perceive has a big head or an attitude, they want to knock him down a few pegs. I'm sure that happens on the main roster all the time. It probably is the explanation that we never really get, but we wonder why certain guys who were doing well all of a sudden are being knocked down a few pegs, and we can't figure out why. I wouldn't be surprised if that has something to do with it. Even if the person doesn't actually have an attitude or a chip on their shoulder, if you are perceived as having one, and you fall on the wrong side of the tracks politically, you're fucked. They will de-push you, and they will keep you in freaking purgatory for months on end. They've done it with people before. That's how they operate. So Patrick came off last few weeks very unlikable. Not as much as Paige, who is so unlikable on this show, it's incredible. And not in a tough love kind of way. She's annoying in like a get-off-my-television kind of way. And I like Paige. But on this show, I don't know how she comes across on Total Divas, but on this show, she is practically unwatchable. Miz even told the judges, hey, you could have saved this guy. You could have saved him. And Paige just goes, well, it's a life lesson. That was her explanation for why she put Patrick in the bottom three. It's a life lesson, she said. I actually thought Daniel Bryan came across the best on Tough Talk. Bryan is great because Daniel Bryan is Daniel Bryan. He's not trying to play bad guy. He's not trying to be something he's not, like certain other judges on that show. You could tell he was very upset about Patrick being voted off. He said he wanted to use his save on either Patrick or ZZ. ZZ was also in the bottom three again, but he couldn't decide, and so he just opted not to use his save at all. I'm not sure I agree with that, but that was, he at least had an explanation. He said he wanted to, but here's why I didn't. He at least tried to explain why. Bryan was the one who picked ZZ for the bottom three because he said flat out, I like you, but I have seen absolutely no improvement from you now in 5 weeks. And that's a fair criticism. I love ZZ. I think ZZ's great. But, you know, I wanted him to win the whole thing when this thing started, and I still would like to see him go go all the way, but let's be honest here. Does ZZ deserve to win Tough Enough? Of course not. Absolutely not. And Brian just flat out admits the process. And this is why I think Brian is so great. He admits the process, the system by which this show works with the voting and the format and everything else, sucks. He didn't use the word sucks, but he said he is not a fan of how the show works. When your own judge, a former world champion, is saying this on the show, you know you got a problem. He said this himself on the air. He was very upset that Patrick was even in the bottom three, although he didn't blame Paige for it, even though she's the one that put him there. But he told Patrick, he said, look, I was 18 years old when WWE first hired me, and then 2 years later I got fired. And it was the best thing that ever could have happened to me, because he went out, and we all know his story, right? He trained all over the world, he became one of the best wrestlers in the world, eventually led him back to WWE. And he's right, if Patrick is already working indies anyway, and he's as big of a fan of the product as he says he is, then you know what, we'll probably see Patrick again. I won't be surprised at all when WWE gives him another tryout, and I'm sure they will. So we've got eight people left. One guy and one girl are winning contracts. It is obvious to me that unless someone gets hurt or they suddenly change the rules of the show and give judges or trainers, you know, veto power, ZZ and Sara Lee are winning the show. I mean, the show is a total popularity contest. That's all it is. If that's what they wanted the show to be, then fine. But Tough Enough will never work the way it's supposed to if all it is a popularity contest. The problem is, right now, if you ask me, Solomonster, who do I think should win? Not who I think is going to win. Who do I think should win Tough Enough at this point? We got 5 weeks left to go. Things can change. My picks are Mata and Gigi. They're the ones who have the look. They have the athletic ability. They're winning challenges. Mata he's got a great story, right? He had to flee Egypt during the Egyptian Revolution there. He saw people getting killed, family members getting killed, and he wanted to make a better life for himself and for his family. He's got a kid that he's away from that means the world to him. You could really get behind a guy like that. He's this big, jacked-up looking dude. He's got the look they like. He's got the size. The little mohawk deal. You know, he stands out, that's for sure. They're looking for people who stand out. They're not looking for the next Daniel Bryan, unfortunately. He's got the best intensity of anybody on that show when it comes to promos and his presence. None of the other guys have all of the things that this guy has. Tanner's an MMA fighter. He went from being a douche at the start of the show to only being a semi-douche. Okay, so what? Who cares? He's boring. He's vanilla. Josh is big. Supposedly he was Vince McMahon's favorite, at least as of a few weeks ago. I think we could all see why. Former football player, big guy. Since the competition started, he's gotten in great shape. He claims he's dropped 35 pounds. Okay, so what? There's nothing about the guy that makes me think, hey, this guy's the next superstar. He's a big guy. He's a big guy with long hair who used to play football. ZZ is a great personality, but he's not in shape. I mean, that much is, they forced him to take his shirt off last Tuesday, and it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a pretty sight. He's not in shape, and it shows when he shits the bed in most of the competitions. Couldn't even climb a rope on the last show. And you'll notice, for the first time this week, he didn't get most of the votes from the audience. Josh actually got like 3% more of the vote than he did in the bottom three, so they were both safe. But more people voted to keep Josh than to keep ZZ, which I thought was very interesting. I think the novelty may be wearing off with this guy, so he's got to step it up. Gigi, I think Gigi is a pretty girl. She's got a great body. She's killing it in the competitions, which didn't help Patrick, but coming in first in most of the competition. She was a little timid at first, you know, when the show started. I think it took a while for her to come out of her shell. She really, at the beginning, she couldn't be anything other than the nice girl. I'm so nice. I'm the nice girl. And now she's got this queen bitch character just down to a T. Sara Lee is cute, right? She's cute as all hell. She's being positioned to win, but she's done only okay in the competitions. My biggest pet peeve, I think, with Sara Lee is that every time she's supposed to be cutting a promo or being serious or being taken seriously, she starts laughing. She smiles, she starts laughing, like it's a joke to her. She looks like somebody playing a wrestler. That's not what they need. They need somebody who looks the part, who acts the part. That's what this show should be about. They need people who look like they can step in there tomorrow if you needed them to. Even if they still need some seasoning, they could step in there tomorrow and be taken seriously. I think Mata and Gigi are the two best. And I don't know why, for some reason, I see some Layla in Gigi. I don't know if it's their background, if it's something about their physical appearance. I mean, Layla, you know, I don't even know what Layla's been up to lately, but you know, Layla's great. I see a little bit of Layla in Gigi. I'm not quite sure why. But I think, you know, they're the two best ones. A lot can change in 5 weeks. Chelsea's good. We haven't seen enough of her because she entered the show so late. I know she's trained with Lance Storm before. She wrestles on the indies. She made that one appearance on Raw last year as, Daniel Bryan's was like his personal trainer or something like that, who claimed that he came on to her. So, she's got experience inside the business, but I haven't seen enough of her to really say for sure, you know, if she should, go all the way. It's frustrating because I think the concept of the show has a lot of potential. I was one of the people who wanted them to bring it back on the network with Austin as the host again. But if this is what they had in mind, then it's better that they just save Steve Austin, I think, for his podcasts. And I'm hoping Undertaker being back on TV now means the next Austin podcast on the network, which I would guess is probably coming up the first week of August. I think that's the pattern. They like to time it with the start of their free month. Maybe that'll be the one where he has Undertaker on as a guest. They did have Undertaker listed in that press release a few months ago when they announced that Austin was coming back to do these things. Undertaker and Hulk Hogan were two of the names in that release. I know which one of those is not happening now. Although, you know what? I tell you one thing. I was thinking about that. If they want to pick up a bunch of new subscribers on this network and really like make mainstream headlines... I know it's a toxic story, and again, I agree, distance yourselves from the guy, but I almost think like after a certain period of time has gone by, and if Hogan lays low and doesn't do too many interviews, if that's what he chooses to do, it would be a hell of a coup for the network if they wanted to kind of round up some new subscribers. If they actually put Hulk Hogan, like they can hype it as his first big public interview since the controversy erupted, and they put him on with Steve Austin. I think that'd be a hell of an idea. He can come on, he can deliver his mea culpa and apologize, talk about, you know, I've got lots of black friends. That's usually how it goes, right? When they get caught saying something racist, how could I be racist when I have black friends? Always makes me laugh. It's like Donald Trump now in every speech. He just has to get a line in there about how the Mexican people love him. I've got tons of Mexicans who work for me. It's like... I cringe every time he says that. But anyway, I suppose we're an hour in. We should probably talk about some actual wrestling. So let's talk about Raw from this past Monday night. Raw was live from Kansas City, Missouri. I thought the Undertaker, Brock Lesnar stuff on this show was fantastic. I had no interest in seeing these two fight again going into all this. But they did about as good of a job as you could possibly do of making that a must-see match for SummerSlam. I still think it's silly that they have to rely on a 50-year-old guy in order to sell SummerSlam this year, but that's their own fault. You know, remember that the next time they cut the legs out from somebody like Kevin Owens. This whole thing was pretty straightforward. Undertaker came out for a promo. He said he basically just got sick and tired of hearing Paul Heyman talk about Brock Lesnar ending the streak over and over again, and so he's back for revenge. Now, this thing still has more holes in it than Swiss cheese, not the least of which is the fact that Undertaker waited, 400 some odd days to extract his revenge when he and Brock shared the same building at WrestleMania this year. And Undertaker apparently was not all that upset because he never laid a hand on Brock Lesnar that day. He could have very easily come out during the main event. Brock Lesnar is the champion. He is in the main event of WrestleMania, 1 year after breaking this guy's streak, and The Undertaker is in the same building. Wouldn't it have been the best revenge to actually go out there and cost Lesnar the championship in the main event? I mean, since he was losing it anyway. And again, Lesnar didn't even have to be pinned. You could have had Undertaker take him out, and Rollins cashes in. Actually, you know what? That would have made, I think that would have been just as good. You've got Undertaker, however he appears. I mean, maybe it would have been tough because they're outdoors, but you could still have the lights go out. Undertaker can appear. He could lay out Lesnar with a tombstone. He could tombstone him on the floor. You know, the way he did to Jake the Snake at WrestleMania 8. Remember that? Tombstone City? That's right. That's right, bitches. Tombstone City existed years before Suplex City ever did. Thanks to Gorilla Monsoon. So he could have laid Lesnar out. You could have had Rollins come out, cash in the briefcase on Reigns, which is what he did anyway. You could have done that too. That at least would have made sense. That was the first appearance Undertaker made since Mania the year before. He didn't even show up on Raw to build up that match with Brock Lesnar. That was literally the first time we saw him since the streak ended the year before. So clearly, if this... And I don't know that this was the plan. I think the ratings are down, and they said, hey, Taker, we need you to come back. I don't think they knew in April that they were going to headline SummerSlam with The Undertaker. So they probably just didn't know, but with a little more foresight, if they thought these things out a little bit more, at least with their top guys, if they thought things out, I think that would have made a hell of a lot more sense. So yes, the people pointing that out, it really doesn't make that much sense at all. And I'll tell you what, something else they could have done to at least try to make this make more sense. Kane is his brother. I was very bummed that they didn't mention Kane at all on Monday night. Kane is the guy's brother. Last time we saw them together, last year, they were allies, right? Because Kane and Undertaker, they've gone back and forth. They've been friends, they've been enemies, they've been friends, they've been enemies. Last time we saw Undertaker and Kane together, they were friends. They were teaming up with Bryan against the Shield. They were allied. Kane had his ankle broken 6 days before Battleground. It would seem like something he might bring up, and he never did. So that was disappointing. Because they opted not to bring up the Kane stuff, all this did was make Undertaker come off like a sore loser. He got beat. Brock didn't cheat. Heyman didn't interfere. He got beat clean as a sheet in the middle of the ring over a year ago, year and a half almost. And now he decides to come back and fuck with Brock Lesnar. If this was anybody but The Undertaker coming back, he'd have been booed out of the building. But he's The Undertaker, so people love him. The brawl, I thought, was great. That pull-apart brawl. So here's what happened. Heyman came out later in the show for a promo of his own. He said Brock wasn't there, but he was there on behalf of Brock. So you knew Brock was going to come out. And he told The Undertaker, basically, you sold your soul to the devil, or you can sell your soul to the devil, but your ass belongs to Brock Lesnar. Such a great line. And then the lights went out. When they came back on, Undertaker was in the ring, and before he could lay a finger on Heyman, Brock's music hit. The place came unglued, in case you were wondering. They were not booing Brock Lesnar. Both guys got massive cheers, so I guess they're just gonna let things be. They're not going to make Brock a heel for the purposes of this feud. People are going to pick and choose who they want to cheer for and who they want to boo. And on this night, they came absolutely unglued for Brock Lesnar. He sprinted down to the ring. They wrestled around a little bit before the referees and all the jobbers came down to separate them. They broke free about, what, five times each. Kept the thing going for a while. Amongst the lower card guys like Jack Swagger and Fandango and Heath Slater and The Ascension were Rusev, Cesaro, and yes, Kevin Owens. No John Cena, no Randy Orton, no Dean Ambrose, no Roman Reigns, no Bray Wyatt. The one lone heel they decided to hold back. That shows you who the most important people are in the pecking order in WWE. Owens is, it is what it is. I mean, Owens is another guy. He's just another guy now. We all knew it would happen. It was just a matter of time. I've seen the same rumors that you guys have had. Some say it's a Vince McMahon call. Some say it's Kevin Dunn who's responsible for all this. Does it even matter? Who cares? Who cares who's responsible? There are forces within that company who do not have as high an opinion of Kevin Owens as other people in that company do, and those are the forces that are winning out right now. If you are a Kevin Owens fan, if you enjoy Kevin Owens' work, if you think he's just the shit right now, and he's great, and his matches are great, and he's really that good, then you just have to hope that, you know, the cream rises to the top and he'll come back around at some point. But right now, they've knocked him down a few pegs. There's no doubt about it. As they were pulling Brock away, Brock yelled at Undertaker, "I will kill you," to which Undertaker responded, "You're going to have to." That was great. This is one of the best things on Raw all year. What made it even better was the announcers got the hell out of Dodge when Brock ran down to the ring, because they've all been killed by Brock Lesnar before. Well, I guess Byron Saxton hasn't, but Cole and JBL have been killed by Brock Lesnar before, and they bailed as soon as he ran down, so we didn't have to be subjected to their usual awful commentary here, which made this even better. Backstage, they got into it again after the commercial break. My one request is that they add a no DQ stipulation to that match at SummerSlam and let these guys brawl all over Brooklyn. Let them brawl all over the Barclays Center and use plunder and weapons and whatever they can get their hands on. I don't want to see a straight-up wrestling match between Brock Lesnar and The Undertaker. I don't want to see that at all. Undertaker is not going to Suplex City. He's not getting 10 Germans from Brock Lesnar. Okay, maybe one or two, but that's it. And that's really what the bulk of Brock's matches are these days. So they need to make this a different kind of match. They need to make it an all-out brawl, no DQ, no count-out, and just let these two beasts fight. Let them go in there and fight. And Lesnar has to go over. So if you're wondering, well, who do you think's going to win? Who should win? I think Brock Lesnar should win. I think Brock Lesnar will win. This is not the time for Brock Lesnar to be losing to The Undertaker. As unrealistic as it sounds, you know, Undertaker is not going to lose twice in a row to Brock. He is, and he should. And it actually does make sense if the plan is to rematch them at WrestleMania. I've heard, you know, murmurs of that, which is not something I had been thinking of. The fact that they would do Lesnar Undertaker 3 with Undertaker getting his redemption. But I guess it kind of makes sense. I mean, if Vince McMahon does not want to do Sting and Undertaker for some reason, then he's already got some, you know, clearly he's already got somebody else in mind. And short of doing the John Cena match that I pitched, I don't know who that person would be. Unless it's Brock. And the idea is to have Undertaker lose at SummerSlam and go away again for a while, and then come back before WrestleMania and request one last match with Brock Lesnar to prove himself. Maybe it's his last match. If he decides going in that this is it, they can build it as The Undertaker's last stand. And then Undertaker can finally slay the beast, and he gets to ride off into the sunset a winner. That's what I could see happening here. As an aside, Undertaker is being advertised to wrestle on WWE's Tour of Mexico in October. So even if he does go away after SummerSlam, he will be across the border a couple months later. They are running three shows on October 16th, 17th, and 18th. He is advertised for all three. It'd be cool if they took one of those dates and turned it into a network special. They can call it, Day of the Dead Man or something. I'd say if Kane is back by then, and I would suggest he probably would be from his storyline broken ankle, they could do, Kane and Undertaker against, Seth Rollins and maybe Bray Wyatt or somebody. If they don't want to do, a straight-up singles match, they could do Undertaker against Kofi Kingston. Kofi Kingston could be the punching bag for all the legends on these international shows who come back. Otherwise, I say, team up Kane and The Undertaker. I think that'd make a hell of an attraction for a network special. The Divas on this show combined for over 20 minutes of ring time last Monday night. Charlotte got Brie Bella to tap out in 9 minutes, and then later on, Sasha Banks and Naomi beat Paige and Becky Lynch in 13 minutes when Paige tapped out to the bank statement. The tag match, it was kind of dead because they put the thing on in the death spot on the show right before the main event. Charlotte and Sasha, they each won their match by submission with their move, and they gave the women time, so I'd say that's a step in the right direction. I still don't sense that this is it's a revolution. They're talking about the Divas Revolution. That's now become a buzzword on TV, like Suplex City did, right? It was this organic thing, and then they just turned it into a marketing slogan. So they keep talking about this Divas Revolution. I don't see a Divas Revolution so far. Seems pretty ho-hum to me. If that's what they want this to be, then there has to be more. You know, you want a real revolution. You want a real revolution. You want to know what would shock people? What would be different? Build to a Divas title match one of these weeks on Raw as the main event. There's something people wouldn't expect. Build to a main event. Don't just throw it out there 1 week. Build to it. Build to a big Divas championship match with Nikki Bella. Nikki Bella does not defend her title on Raw very often. Build to a title match with Nikki Bella. I know some people are going to laugh at the idea of putting the women on in the main event. Ha ha, they're going to laugh. You know, you're out of your mind. But the only way people are ever going to take the Diva stuff seriously is if WWE starts taking it seriously themselves. At that point, you know, once they do that, if they give these women a shot, it's up to the women to go out there and deliver and not fuck up. But they keep talking about this revolution. I'm like, well, when does this revolution start? Because I don't see one. I don't see anything. I don't see anything different at all. The women are in the same spot, same point in the show. I mean, this probably wouldn't have been the week to do that, but pick a week and put them in the main event. And give them 15 minutes. Give them 15, 17 minutes. You know, what you would give to like an NXT women's main event. Pray for a hot crowd. And let's see what they can do. Cena and Rollins had an in-ring promo battle. It looks like it may be champion against champion at SummerSlam. Possibly title for title. Which is interesting. If only because we just saw that in Ring of Honor. I'm sure that's no coincidence. Of course, John Cena could very easily lose the U.S. title between now and then in one of his open challenges. I would say to Kevin Owens, if he's going to drop that title before SummerSlam, he better drop it to Kevin Owens to make up for that horrendous tap-out finish at Battleground. You know, again, it's not the fact that Cena won at Battleground. I predicted that Cena was not losing the championship. You know, people seem to forget that. I'm not upset that John Cena won and beat Kevin Owens, although I can make an argument that that was stupid too. It was the way that he did it. It was completely unnecessary. It was completely foolish and stupid. And, you know, at least a minor way of maybe rehabilitating Owens would be for him to cash in. Well, not cash in, but, you know, take advantage of the open challenge and win the championship. And that way they could still do John Cena and Seth Rollins for the WWE title and let Kevin Owens defend the U.S. title at SummerSlam against Cesaro, which seems to be the direction they're going in anyway. The main event of the show is John Cena, Orton, and Cesaro beating Kevin Owens, Rusev, and Sheamus. Sheamus walked out on his partners. Then Kevin Owens got into it with Rusev, kicked him in the face. Then he walked out, so poor Rusev was left all alone. Lana came down and attacked Summer Rae on the outside of the ring. Attitude adjustment into the giant swing, into a slingshot, into an RKO by Randy Orton. Big pop for that finishing sequence. All the baby faces celebrate together. A feel-good moment to go off the air on Monday night. Cesaro in the main event is something I can get used to seeing. I do want to mention this, though. I saw Taz on Twitter referring to Cesaro using the towel gimmick on his head for his entrance as a lazy ripoff and a lack of creativity. And then a fan on Twitter responded to Taz and said that it was dickish for him to call Cesaro out on that. And Taz said that there was a time when ripping off another wrestler's gimmick was, quote, dickish. I didn't know Taz had a trademark on the towel deal. The guy hasn't wrestled a match in 9 years. And it was one match at that ECW One Night Stand pay-per-view. Remember that? Against Jerry Lawler. It wasn't even a freaking match. He didn't do anything. He put Lawler in the finishing choke of his. And Lawler tapped out. So I hesitate to even call that a match. Before that, you'd have to go back to 2002. That was when Taz retired and made the leap over to the commentary booth. 13 years ago. Taz's lucky number, 13. I wonder if Taz had an issue with Kane doing the exact same gimmick in 2003 after Kane got unmasked. Taz was only retired at that point for about a year, not 13 years. He was maybe even not a full year. He had retired. He was still working for the company. I wonder if he thought Kane was being a dick, too. You think he said something to him? I mean, they shared the same locker room. It's possible. Maybe he did. I just think the whole thing is really silly. Somebody brought that to my attention, and I saw that. I was just like, really, dude? Really? Come on.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
NXT has booked a show in San Antonio, Texas on September 19th, which just so happens to coincide with night two of Ring of Honor's All-Star Extravaganza that same night in the same city, about 17 miles away. WWE has also reportedly been calling around to certain buildings that ROH runs about running shows there, provided they no longer allow ROH to run there. It's a war that ROH can't win. I mean, that's just a fact. If WWE wants to get nasty with this, ROH simply cannot compete. They're owned by a $100 million media company, but they obviously are not interested in spending all that much money on Ring of Honor, since their production hasn't really even improved that much under the Sinclair banner. I think they just got maybe some new lighting, but even the lighting is still not great. You would think for a media company that had that much money behind it, if they really believe that strongly in wrestling and they really believe that strongly in ROH, that ROH would look, the look of the show would be a lot more different than it is. And believe me, they're not about to spend a shitload of money to compete with WWE when it comes to this little tit for tat that they've got going on. It sucks for ROH. You just hope that, you just want WWE to kind of leave them alone in a way. I'd like to see both companies do very well. I don't think that's the mentality that WWE has right now. Even though ROH really does not pose much of a serious threat to them. But, you know, they feel they have to do what they have to do, and we're already starting to see signs of that. The Full Sail University crowd on this show this past Wednesday booed every single mention of Brooklyn. When they mentioned the TakeOver show, they just booed and booed and booed. Brooklyn has become the biggest heel on NXT. I think those Florida folks have been out in the sun too much. I think it's fried their brains. I say quit your crying. We had the return of Eva Marie. I know this is what everybody... Forget the Hogan stuff. I know everybody's been waiting to hear my thoughts on this. Eva Marie made her in-ring re-debut on NXT this past week against Cassie, which is what they're calling the former Casey Cassidy now. First, the bad news. Let's get the bad news out of the way first. The bad news is Eva Marie is easily the worst of the women they have on their roster down there right now. That's the bad news. The good news is that it was not a total disaster. She actually showed some signs of improvement in this match. She even busted out the old sliced bread number two as her new finish. It looked a little wonky, but she pulled it off. You could tell she's been training with Brian Kendrick. I think the biggest thing that I noticed was how tentative, it's probably a good word for it, very tentative she looked on a lot of the moves that she was doing. Even just hitting the ropes, she kind of gently hit them. I want to see less gentle, more aggressive. And yet, yes, now you can make all your jokes about how Solo Monster wants more aggressive, less gentle out of his women. I do. And I think that, you know, she'll get better and she'll improve over time. I think she's getting there. She's on the developmental show right now, which is exactly where she belongs. She's in the right place. I'd rather see her plying her craft and getting better and having matches like this on NXT than I would on Monday Night Raw. She even got the John Cena treatment at the beginning of the match. She got dueling Let's Go Eva, Eva Sucks chants. She is now the John Cena of NXT, which means that she will be the women's champion soon because all the other women's submission finishers will be ineffective against her because she never gives up. Baron Corbin and Samoa Joe each won their respective squash matches. Joe faces Rhino in 2 weeks on NXT. I'm not sure why two, but that's what they said. And Joe finally has new entrance music. Hallelujah! Thank God. It's an improvement from the last one. That's all I'll say. I will reserve further judgment on this music until I hear it again, but it is already much, much better than whatever that was that he had before. Bayley beat Emma with the belly-to-belly suplex, then cut a promo after the match saying that she wants to be the NXT Women's Champion, but she wants to earn it. So next week, she wants a match with Charlotte to prove herself worthy. I figure Dana Brooke probably gets involved in that match. Bayley gets the win. She keeps winning until TakeOver and gets the title shot at Sasha Banks in Brooklyn. Uh-oh, Florida folks, I said that word again. I think having Kaz and Enzo win the tag team titles in Brooklyn and Bayley, let's say, finally winning the big one that same night in the same building, I think it would just get a massive reaction. I think they're setting themselves up for some pretty big title changes on that show. Vaudevillains beat Sawyer Fulton and Angelo Dawkins with the Whirly Dervish. Next week, they get their tag team title match against Blake and Murphy. Good. Good. Get it out of the way now. Keep them the hell away from the titles on that Brooklyn show. And the main event segment was the GM, William Regal, hosting a contract signing for TakeOver with Finn Balor and Kevin Owens. Owens made it a point to enunciate the word Brooklyn when mentioning TakeOver, which only pissed off the crowd even more. What a heel. I love the guy. A bunch of crybabies, those people. Broke down when Kevin Owens attacked Finn Balor, and when Regal tried to break things up, Owens decked Regal. And Balor got the better of the challenger, sent him packing, but you know there'll be hell to pay for Kevin Owens putting his hands on the general manager. I don't know. I'm not really feeling this rematch right now. It's still early. They got a month to really build it up and promote it. It just doesn't have any fire behind it. It just, you know, we know Owens is main roster talent now, for better or worse, and he ain't winning the title in Brooklyn. So it just feels like a placeholder match for whoever the next challenger is going to be. Maybe it's Joe. Yeah, I said before, I think a big reason why Samoa Joe is not really being focused on that much right now is the fact that he still has indie dates outstanding. He's still going to be doing indie dates through the month of August. And I think when August, maybe by around the time this TakeOver show happens, by the end of August, when he has exhausted all of his indie commitments and he can focus full-time on NXT, then they may put him into a high-profile feud. And it may be against Finn Balor for the championship, because I don't think Hideo Itami is going to be ready at least until October, November. Otherwise, I'd say they'd have Itami come out and like attack Balor at TakeOver, but I don't think he'll be ready by then. So it would make sense if Joe were the next challenger for the championship. I heard that Balor and Joe had a freaking fantastic match the other night at the NXT house show in Miami. They tore the house down. I'm sure it would make for a hell of a feud on TV if they ever wanted to do it. Let's get right into TNA. We got two TNA-related news stories. I didn't watch Impact. I think I've pretty much given up on Impact. I mean, you guys voted for ROH over TNA reviews anyway. I was still going to watch Impact and comment when things happened. And once Dixie came back, I just completely lost interest. But that doesn't mean that there are not things going on in the world of TNA that we have to talk about. And the first story involves Bully Ray. Bully Ray, who just returned to TNA television and was installed maybe, 2 weeks ago as the new general manager by Dixie Carter. So wrap your head around that. Is already gone from the company. This according to PW Insider, who broke the story. They said that Bully Ray was not happy with the state of affairs in the company, and he decided it would be in his best interest to stay the hell away from there. Now, TNA responded and said that Bully Ray did not quit. And that's not really what the story said, although I think at the end of the story, Mike Johnson had a line in there about Bully Ray quitting, and that was their bone of contention. They kind of hinged on that word. Oh, he didn't quit. He didn't have a contract, so he couldn't quit. They didn't deny the story. They didn't deny any of this. They just said he didn't quit, because it would be hard to quit unless you had a contract. And so they probably had him on like a per-appearance deal, which they pretty much have 98% of their roster on right now anyway. So TNA contends he didn't quit. He was never meant to be in a long-term storyline, and they've already taped the end of his storyline arc, and it's going to air on TV in a few weeks. Okay, fine. I'm amazed that Bully even had to go back to TNA to find out how fucked up things are there, as if this is some big secret. he's done interviews. Devon has done interviews about WWE, maybe bringing them back. They can't understand why WWE hasn't brought them back. They openly talk about this. They would go back to WWE in a heartbeat if they made a reasonable offer. It's obvious they want to have one last run there. If that's what they want, then Bully's right. It would be best for him to step away from TNA and not be associated with a dead brand. And I think he realizes that. And like I said, if WWE were to call and make a reasonable offer to both of them, because they're not going to work for peanuts, but if they made them a decent offer, you could bet your ass that they would be gone in a heartbeat. And TNA, I mean, what more can be said? This news broke on Friday night after all the Hogan stuff. It was a bad news day for WWE. It's been a bad news weekend because of the Hogan stuff for WWE. It's almost like TNA was offended that somebody else stole the negative spotlight from them. They stole their thunder. And TNA was all like, oh yeah, well I'll show you. And then this story broke. And TNA goes ahead and retains its championship. a title that they've worked very hard to keep, let me tell you. Now, that leads to another story, which is actually the bigger story, a much bigger story as it relates to TNA and its business practices. A good-sized portion of the TNA roster has been told that their contracts, which include a monthly guarantee, okay, most of the guys, I guess, had a monthly guarantee, those are being dropped. And in its place, they will be offered per-appearance contracts. So I don't know if that means that the old contracts are null and void. I wouldn't think so, because that would free everybody to just walk out and leave. Maybe if they're converting the contracts, if they could even do that legally, I don't know. So the way it worked before is before they were paid a guaranteed monthly base salary, effectively. And then on top of that, they were paid for each appearance that they actually made for TNA. If it was a slow month, as most months are these days for TNA, and since they don't run house shows, you at least got your guarantee, whatever that guarantee is. Now, they would only get paid per appearance, nothing more. There is no base monthly figure that they would be paid. TNA contends that the per appearance fees they pay are going to go up, so in effect it would offset the guarantee, but that's not going to be the case for everybody. There are some guys, I'm sure, who are going to get fucked over on this deal, and a lot of people are very upset. There's obviously a lot of very discontent wrestlers on that roster about this. Rumors that some of them may simply opt to move on from TNA, as many of their colleagues have done recently, Low-Key and MVP being the most recent. You know, it's worth noting that not everybody is being offered a per-appearance deal. There are guys like Kurt Angle and Jeff Hardy, I'm sure, who will keep their guaranteed contracts that they have. This is all part of the cost-cutting that TNA is doing ahead of September, when Destination America is likely going to drop Impact, like September, October, somewhere around there. They are still on target. Destination America still has not commented publicly about that whole thing. They certainly have not denied the story. TNA has not denied. They never denied the story that Destination America would opt out in the fall. Not one time has TNA denied that story. All these other moves that now are going on top of that, I think it's very telling. And it does not speak well to what TNA feels its chances are of landing another big TV contract anytime soon. If they do land another TV deal, it may not be for as much money as they're getting from Destination America, which is even less than they got from Spike. And they were surviving largely off that TV money. So it paints a very bleak picture. I don't know how many guys are going to sign a contract like that if there's any kind of clause in there that blocks them from wrestling for a promotion with TV or a promotion that does iPay-per-view, which a lot of them now do. TNA is running so few events. If they're paying most of their guys per appearance now, I mean, short of wrestling for WWE, which I can understand they wouldn't want them to do that, these guys need to make money. And if they think they can get themselves booked somewhere else to make up for whatever money they're losing, if I'm TNA, I let them do it. I don't restrict them. I let them go ahead and do it. They have to support themselves. I remember a time when the Knockouts champion, I forget who it was, the Knockouts champion in TNA was also working at a sunglass hut as a way to supplement her income. And she was the champion at the time. Jessie Neal. Jessie Neal was almost evicted from his apartment because he couldn't afford the rent. Also, while working for TNA. I mean, why even bother? There's plenty of other places to work. It hardly seems worth it. To me, no one has yet to answer the most important question in this entire thing, which is whether or not this means that Bram has to sign a new per-appearance deal with TNA. Bram may have to sign another contract. That's what I want to know. What's going on with Bram? Maybe somebody can find out for me. Ring of Honor. I did not get a chance to see this week's show. This was the 200th episode. It doesn't sound like I missed much. I heard that it was mostly a clip show anyway, except for that 8-man tag team main event. I saw also that Jay Lethal and Roderick Strong went to a 60-minute Broadway in their match at Death Before Dishonor on Friday night. I'm sorry I missed that. The bigger news, though, with respect to ROH, is that Destination America has seemingly booted Ring of Honor from its 8 p.m. slot on Wednesdays, and instead it will air only at 11 p.m. from now on. 11 p.m. had been the replay slot, so the way it worked was Ring of Honor aired first. It was the lead into Impact. Impact is 2 hours. When Impact goes off the air, they show an ROH replay, and at midnight, they air a replay of Impact. That's how this whole thing has been working. And now that has changed. 11 p.m. will be the first run airing and the only airing on Destination America for Ring of Honor. Destination America has other shows these next couple of weeks listed in the 8 p.m. slot. They have one show about Bigfoot. You know, it's Destination America. Whatever their programming is, they've kind of plugged it in there. It's not a radical change, but it's also not a positive one. It's never a good thing when your own network boots you out of your time slot. The 8 p.m. airing last week, just for comparison to show you how this may or may not affect the audience, the 8 p.m. airing of ROH last week, the final one as it turned out, did 139,000 viewers. The 11 p.m. airing did 128,000 viewers. So there's really only a slight difference. I don't know that it's going to dramatically impact the audience. Maybe the 11 p.m. audience will actually go up. When you combine the two, I mean, Ring of Honor is going to be lower, so they are losing audience here. But I don't know that it will have a dramatic impact on the audience. But it can't be construed as a good thing. And I don't know. The state of wrestling on Destination America is very tenuous right now. Who knows 3, 4, 5 months from now if they'll even be wrestling on that network? I hope Ring of Honor stays put. It's a nuisance now that it's only going to be at 11 p.m. I may have to watch it the next day or the day after that. Usually I would knock them both out. I would watch NXT first, and then I'd get caught up on my DVR on Ring of Honor. So it affects my viewing habits. It may not affect yours. For me, it's just more a pain in the ass. But, they're still airing it, so, I mean, that's good. If they weren't airing it, then I wouldn't be able to watch it. Lucha Underground. Oh, you know what? Before I get to Lucha Underground, there's one more thing here. While we're on the subject of TV shows, there actually is good news, and it concerns New Japan. New Japan Pro Wrestling is coming back to Access Television for a third season. I didn't even know they had a second season, but apparently they're coming back for a third season. Starting August 14th, it's going to run through December 11th. They are doing very well, apparently, on Access Television. They're averaging about 200,000 viewers per episode for a show. Largely, it's made up of matches that are like at least a year, year and a half old. These are not recent matches that they're airing on the show. 200,000 viewers on a network that a lot of people still don't have with matches that are that old, that's pretty impressive. And according to the story about it in this week's Observer, that makes it the fourth most watched wrestling show on cable in this country behind Raw, SmackDown, and Impact. So New Japan is killing it right now. Lucha Underground, the final two episodes are upon us, folks. Do you realize that? Didn't hit me until last night. Two more weeks of Lucha Underground, and then it's done. Finished. Over. Until season two, and we still don't know if there's even going to be a second season. They have a standing offer from El Rey. El Rey wants them back. El Rey has said, listen, we want you back for like, I think something like 40 episodes. We can start you out in October. But they need more money. They're not satisfied just coming back and slashing the budget just for the sake of doing a show. The EP, when he was on Austin's podcast, he made it very clear they need more money. They want to maintain their current production values. They want to bring in new talent. They can't do that unless they get an infusion of new money. It cost them $20 million for that first season. Even if they get a season two, again, it wouldn't air until October at the earliest, so this is the end for now. This is the end of the road for Lucha Underground. That makes me very sad. You guys know this has become my favorite wrestling show on TV week to week. I believe firmly this is the best wrestling show on television today. It has been for months. It would be tragic if TNA outlived Lucha Underground. Maybe not even tragic. It would be a travesty if TNA outlived Lucha Underground. It's I don't know. It's sad, but we got two big episodes left. Tejano beat Johnny Mundo. He opened the show. Tejano won by DQ. This is actually really good stuff. These two worked well together. Tejano won by DQ when the crew interfered. They attacked Tejano. Mundo joined in until Alberto El Patron ran down to make the save. Dario Cueto met with Hernandez in his office. He announced that at Ultima Lucha, which is kicking off 1 week early, which is next week, instead of just the two-hour special on August 5th, next week's show will be part one of Ultima Lucha, and Hernandez is going to square off against Drago. Cueto says that he's been reading his tweets, and Hernandez is not well-liked by the fans. He is not well-liked by TNA either right now. Cueto said the match with Drago will be a Believer's Backlash match, which is a strap match where the fans will surround the ring with straps in their hands, and they can attack the participants with those straps if they get thrown outside. I heard the... Yeah, I didn't read spoilers or anything like that, but I did hear that it was a mix of planted fans and actual fans that had straps outside the ring, so I'm very interested to see how that comes across on TV. The Mac, and they call him Cage. One more time, they had a match. So, you know, why not, I guess. Mac got the win right away. It really wasn't much of a match. It was literally over in 15 seconds. And Mac got the win with a cradle. Cage, the good sport that he is, beat the shit out of him for it. They brawled all over the place, outside the ring, up the staircase. Finally, security came and broke them up. Dario Cueto emerged from his office, got a microphone, and he announced that at Ultima Lucha next week, it's going to be Mac against Cage in a Falls Count Anywhere match. And we are told that after the break, Dario is going to tell us about those ancient Aztec medallions. He's going to tell us what they mean. So they come back from break, and there's a podium in the ring. There's clearly a belt in there. It's got like a little dressing over it, so we can't see what it is, like a cloth. And he removes the cloth, and we see this brand new championship belt, and it has seven holes that are perfectly sized to fit each of the seven ancient Aztec medallions. He calls it the Gift of the Gods title. He says whoever holds it can trade it in for a world championship match, but there's no cashing in here on Lucha Underground. That's what he said. None of that cashing in crap. He said he needs 1 week's notice so that he can properly promote the match. See, the dude is a natural promoter. He gets it. He gets it. None of these instant, on-the-spot championship matches. The guy wants a week to promote the match so he can get people to come and watch the show. He said, however, if you wait too long to ask for your world title opportunity, you may have to defend that title, and then you risk losing it to somebody else. So he announces a seven-way match for Ultima Lucha, including each of the people currently in possession of the medallions, and he invites them all to come on down, all of them except for Phoenix, who has not been seen since Mil Muertes destroyed him. So we got Jack Evans, Aerostar, King Cuerno, Bengala, Sexy Star, all of whom have won medallions over the last several weeks, and Big Rick. At the beginning of this week's show, Big Rick was in Dario's office, and Dario... I mean, literally handed him a medallion. He basically paid him off, gave him a medallion. He never actually won one. And then, I mean, this was really cool. They had each of the participants take their medallion and they placed it into each, you know, their respective slot in the belt. There's a magnet, apparently, that's in each vacant hole where the medallions go, because as soon as the guy would, like, have the medallion in his hand and it was... He was about to put it in the belt like sucked it right in. I really like this a lot. One of the great things about Lucha Underground is that even when they borrow ideas from the outside, they borrow an idea from WWE. Like when Dario tried to take credit basically for inventing the Royal Rumble, which I thought was hilarious. But they went and they did that Aztec Warfare match, which was basically their version of a Royal Rumble, and they did a better Royal Rumble than WWE does. So, you know, Lucha Underground will take these ideas and they will actually put their own spin. They will improve upon it. You know, when TNA tries to innovate, we end up with a freaking reverse pinfall match, like the one they taped this past week for one of those one-night-only pay-per-views that nobody watches. If you'd like to know how a reverse pinfall match works, it's exactly as it sounds. If you get pinned, you win the match. If you do the pinning, you apparently lose. Don't even fucking ask me. I'm just telling you what happened. I thought the person who tweeted that to me was trying to be funny, but no, he was being serious. This actually happened. So because Phoenix wasn't there, he was putting his medallion up for grabs in a battle royal. And the last two men in that battle royal would then decide the winner by pinfall or submission. Suddenly, out comes Phoenix. And Dario says, well, you're too late, but I'll tell you what, you could try to win it back by being in the Battle Royal. Famous B was one of the people in that Battle Royal. We haven't seen Famous B since Pentagon broke his arm all those many months ago. In the span of about 30 seconds in this match, Famous B did a crotch chop, a pedigree, and a Hulk Hogan leg drop. I guess a poorly timed Hulk Hogan leg drop, but that's what he did. On the pedigree, Matt Stryker on commentary said, well, it works on Monday night, so why not? Came down to Phoenix and Marty the Moth, which Phoenix won, so he got his medallion back. He placed it into the championship belt. All seven medallions are now in there, and he will be part of the seven-way match next week. Up next, they promoted that we would hear the Lucha Underground champion Prince Puma speak for the very first time. He has yet to talk on the show. I mean, this guy has been on the show now almost a year. We've never once heard Prince Puma utter a single word. Conan is always the one doing the talking for him. He's also not Mexican. He's a black guy from Illinois, so it would kind of kill the illusion, I guess, if he ever actually spoke. He ended up not speaking here either. It was a total bait and switch. Mil Muertes and Katrina interrupted. Mil was wearing a suit. Somehow he looked even scarier than usual. The Disciples of Death attacked Puma. He made short work of them. Mil Muertes ran down to the ring. The two of them had a brawl. It ended with Puma hitting the 630 splash off the top rope, and that's how they went off the air. Probably a bad omen for Prince Puma that he was the last man standing at the end of this go-home show. Although I don't believe their championship match is actually airing next week. I would think they're saving that for the two-hour special on August 5th. So let's run this down here. Here is the full Ultima Lucha card that is going to start next week, and it will culminate with the two-hour special on August 5th. We'll run through the matches here. I'll give my predictions. Falls Count Anywhere, the Mac against Cage. I'm going to go with Cage. The whole basis for this feud is that Cage is pissed off. He's lost a couple of times to the Mac now. He's embarrassed. I think Cage gets his win back on the show. Believer's Backlash, Drago against Hernandez. Since I think they probably knew Hernandez was on his way out, I can't imagine that he won. I mean, maybe he did, and then after he won is when he went to them and said he wanted out of his contract. I don't know. I'm going to assume Drago gets the win in that match. Blue Demon Jr. against Tejano. Blue Demon's a legend in the business. He's an older guy. Tejano is one of the biggest stars in Mexico, especially after the passing of Perro Aguayo Jr. earlier this year. I think Tejano has kind of been slid into that slot. I mean, he's a babyface now on this show, but he's a huge heel down in Mexico. I can't imagine that AAA would want him losing here on this show, so I'm going to go with Tejano over Blue Demon. Pentagon Jr. and Vampiro. This is the match I'm looking forward to the most. I don't expect much of an actual match. I expect this to be just a complete and total brawl with all kinds of weapons and smoke and mirrors and bullshit, and I can't wait. Pentagon Jr. is my pick. He's my guy. I got to go with him. I could see them giving Vampiro the feel-good win, but I think Pentagon should win. Alberto El Patron against Johnny Mundo. That should be a hell of a match. I'm going to go with El Patron to get the win. We have the Gift of the Gods match, the seven-way. Big Rick, Aerostar, Bengala, King Cuerno, Sexy Star, Jack Evans, and Phoenix. Here's how I'm determining this. Phoenix is obviously one of the biggest stars in that match. He's one of the bigger stars they've built around on this show. He's also in real life brothers with Pentagon Jr., in case you didn't know that. I didn't know that until this past week. I look at it like this. If Mil Muertes is going to win the championship on the show, and I think he is, I guess I'm skipping ahead there, but I am picking Mil Muertes to win the title from Prince Puma. Mil Muertes, obviously a huge heel. Then you need to have a babyface challenger. And Phoenix has, obviously, a very big history with Mil Muertes. So if Phoenix wins the Gift of the Gods title and then decides to trade that in for a championship match, a few weeks later against Mil Muertes, makes sense, right? Rekindles their feud, babyface against heel. So my pick in the Gift of the Gods match is Phoenix. We have the Trios titles on the line, Ivelisse, Son of Havoc, and Angelico defending against the Disciples of Death. I got to go with Ivelisse, Son of Havoc, and Angelico to retain. And then the main event I mentioned already, Mil Muertes, I've got him beating Puma to win the championship. So those are my picks. I'm really looking forward to this. These last 2 weeks, I think they're going to be a couple of... I mean, look, if the rest of the season is any indication, I mean, every week the show is either good or great. It makes sense. The characters and stories, they're compelling. They're fun to watch. If this is their WrestleMania, I mean, I can only imagine what they've got up their sleeve. So I think these are going to be some really standout shows. Great time to get into Lucha Underground. If you haven't been paying attention, it's not the sort of thing you have to start from the beginning, although I would say if you really wanted to get into the show, probably just wait until the season's over and start from the beginning. But if not, you can watch these two shows, and I think you'll enjoy them all the same. So I can't recommend it enough. Let's get to the mailbag here and some of your questions. I got to cut this a little short because we're going to go way over. I can't get to every question I wanted to this week, but we'll get to as many as we can. Email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com, if you have any questions. That includes MP3 audio questions. This one comes from Robert from Oviedo, Florida. Is there an inconsistency to having those contract signing segments that we see so often? It's funny I get this question after I just got done talking about a contract signing this week on NXT. He says, watching Raw, we're led to believe that many of the matches are booked spontaneously by the current authority figure, especially the main event. Often the wrestlers are told that the match will take place right now, and the wrestlers have no say in whether or not they want to participate. This indicates that contracts are not necessary in WWE land. It's the WWE universe, buddy. Get it right. That makes all the contract signing segments seem pointless. Obviously, the scenes are done to build heat for a match, but it makes no sense in terms of storyline logic. Well, that's your other mistake. Storyline logic is not something they care too much about. So that should answer your question right there. You make a great point. Think of all the times that Triple H and Stephanie will make a match on the spot. It happens every week, right? Every week. Literally, every single week. And then they'll announce a contract signing as the main event segment for a show that you're expected to wait around 3 hours, right? They'll promote this as the main event. 3 hour show. You gotta wait until the main event to see this contract signing. And as Robert points out, it's totally meaningless. Contract signings in WWE are a relic of the past. If they really wanted to get with the times, you know what they would do? They would promote a weigh-in in the ring for the end of these shows instead of a contract signing. Now, I know there's no weight classes in WWE. That's really why you do a weigh-in. And there are no weight classes. I'm not advocating weight classes in WWE or anything like that. But it would give it more of a big fight feel if they did this for the main events, right? Because they don't do contract signings for fucking intercontinental title matches. They do it for the WWE Championship. It's for the main event. They want to promote the match as being a big deal. They can do that in a way that actually kind of makes sense. Weigh-ins are a popular thing in UFC, and again, I know it's because of the weight classes, but put that on the side for a second. They just had a weigh-in. I think it was the Conor McGregor one, which was a huge show. UFC, I think it was 189. They just had it a few weeks ago. I mean, they had a sold-out crowd in Vegas for the weigh-in. Forget the show. For the freaking weigh-in. So, weigh-ins are a way, all the same that contract signings would be in pro wrestling, to get people amped up and hyped up for a big fight. And so, at least in this case, I mean, there's nothing stopping you from having a weigh-in. You don't need weight classes. You could just have a frickin' scale in the ring, have a few guys in suits. You don't even have to identify who they are. You can call them WWE officials. Have some of the agents. You know, they're standing around in the ring. And it gives the guys a reason to be out there cutting promos on each other to sell the pay-per-view. You could have a straight promo segment, and if it's a strong promo, you could sell, you know, pay-per-views that way. Or I guess I keep saying pay-per-views. Sell network subscriptions that way. But I just think it would be kind of a more modern way of doing it. I think the contract signings, the way they treat them, they're a relic. Now, if contract signings actually meant something, if it was established that, you know, it was necessary, then fine, do a contract signing. But I think it's one of those old wrestling relics that they hold on to that really has outlived its usefulness. Michael from Lusk, Wyoming. Why were Rey Mysterio's 3 world title reigns in WWE cut short? Was it personal between him and the company, or did they not have faith in him as a world champion? Well, it got real personal between them at the end, before he left. But they just never believed in him as champion. I should rephrase that. Vince McMahon never believed in him as champion. Vince McMahon didn't even want Rey Mysterio as the world champion that first time. Those writers had to fight for it. When he won the title of WrestleMania 22, if Vince had his way, that never would have happened. Vince was dead set against it. And you could tell by the way he was booked after that, right? So he relented. He's like, fine, we'll put the title on Ray. And it's almost as though he didn't get his way, but in the end he kind of did. Because he was booked to lose on television all the time. The Great Khali, why even do that match? But the Great Khali beat him on television. I mean, everybody beat him, I think. And he was one of the worst booked champions that they've ever had. Then the second time, he won the title in a Fatal 4-Way match. He held it for all of a month before Kane beat him for it. And then the third time, he lost it to John Cena later that same night. Vince never wanted him to be the champion, ever. He was too small. He was too unbelievable for him to be the champion. So even though he, like I said, he relented, he agreed. The other writers, the other forces won out against Vince. In the end, Vince got exactly what he wanted. Vince had his way. Vince never put his muscle behind Rey as champion. And that's why he was booked the way that he was. Rey Mysterio never drew as champion because A, he never had the title long enough, and B, Vince never gave him the chance. Now, if Vince says, listen, we're going to make this small guy our world champion, we're going to give him a solid 6 to 9 months, we're going to really build him up, the average person watching WWE is going to look at Rey Mysterio as the world champion, and I'll say it right now, they probably would laugh. They'd probably look and say, wait a minute, the freaking belt is almost as big as this guy's body. This is the world champion. Oh, how fake. Yeah, a lot of people would think that. I'm not even saying Vince was wrong to not want to put the championship on him. If I were in charge, if I were booking at the time, I never would have put the world title on Rey Mysterio in the first place. I mean, that's just me personally. So I'm not even faulting Vince. If that was his call and he didn't want Rey to be the champion, that's fine. And I can understand exactly all the reasons why, you know, he wouldn't want him to have the championship. Especially if you want your champion to be a, you know, quote, legitimate champion. We're going to make this guy, you know, the face of the company or something like that. I get that. I totally get that. But the fact is, Vince was never going to give him a chance to draw, even after he relented and said, okay, fine, we'll put the title on him. He was already thinking of ways to get it off him before he even won it. Greg from Providence, Rhode Island. After seeing Bray Wyatt and Luke Harper reunite at Battleground, how would you feel about WWE creating a new version of the Wyatt family? This time, Bray would lead a larger, more diverse group consisting of Harper, Baron Corbin, Bo Dallas, and Damian Sandow. Harper would be Bray's right-hand man. Corbin would effectively replace Eric Rowan as the muscle of the group. Bo, as you've mentioned several times before on the Sound Off, would make a good lackey for Bray, and could adopt a much darker personality, becoming more of a creepy, giggling man-child. Sandow would be rechristened Brother Damien, take on a more scraggly look, and would also adopt a more dark, psychotic personality. When I got Greg's email, I thought about this, because I get tons of emails, oh, the Wyatt family, we should have a new Wyatt family, who should be in it? When I got Greg's email and I looked at all the names he listed, I just thought to myself, this is actually pretty damn good. I like this. I like this a lot. I still think we somehow do get Bo Dallas in there as Bray's lackey. I've been saying this for months. He should be his lackey, kind of like a Raven Stevie Richards kind of deal. But I would be fine with those other guys joining as part of a new group. It's been a while since we've had a faction with more than three people in it in WWE, unless you count the Authority. Bray would be perfect in the cult leader role. We've kind of already seen him do that before, but this in a much larger way. It gives Sandow TV time. And I got this question before the Hogan stuff broke. And so one thing I didn't mention earlier is the effect that the fallout from the Hogan stuff that it had on two people in WWE, and those two people are Curtis Axel and Damian Sandow. Obviously, Axelmania is dead, brother. Axelmania is no more. And they came out together for a tag team match at the house show in Bakersfield the other night. And it must have, I mean, obviously it was a last minute thing because Axel walked out there looking like a low rent version of John Cena from 2006. You know, he had these jorts on, and you could kind of tell his Axelmania red knee pads were underneath the shorts. he was caught on very short notice. I'm sure whatever he wears on TV from now on will be very different. But he just walked out there with Sandow. They looked like a couple of job guys. I mean, there was nothing about them that stood out at all. And Sandow, because of all this, he wasn't doing Macho Mandow. It doesn't make sense for him to do Macho Mandow anymore. So he probably is going to be directly affected by this as well. Now he's just old Damian Sandow. Which would have been fine when he split from The Miz. And remember that one promo? They actually let Damian Sandow, for the first and only time in his career, come out on Raw and cut a serious, you know, somewhat lengthy, not too lengthy, but somewhat lengthy promo in the middle of the ring. It was almost like a work shoot, you know, the way he was talking, everything he was talking about. And the fans loved him. The fans, they cheered for him. They loved this guy. And I thought to myself, this is the perfect time to give him the shot to run just as himself. He could be a solid intercontinental U.S. level guy, maybe even put the title on him. And then came Macho Mandow. So they decided, we're not going to do serious, we're going to do comedy. Now they can't even do comedy, at least not with that character. So the timing is perfect, because now Sandow, all of a sudden, he's a guy without any direction. You know, he's a man with absolutely no plans, no direction, completely rudderless in the sea, just stalled out in the middle of the ocean. So if ever there was a time to take him and put him in a group like this, and he's down in the dumps, he's down on his luck, he can't be Macho Mandow anymore, and so they rechristen him Brother Damian. I mean, I love that idea. I think that's just fantastic. And it gives him TV time, because without something like this, he ain't even going to be on TV. He's not even going to be on Raw. So it gives him a reason to be on TV. You can introduce a new guy from NXT, the Baron Corbin thing. That allows you to introduce somebody new from NXT who can actually learn from and work with the other guys and be protected because he's not quite ready yet, which he's not. Baron Corbin is not ready for the main roster. So I'm okay if you want to bring him up. I mean, he's decent. And I think maybe working with Bray and Harper and those guys, he could probably get better. You know, working house show matches and all that and learn a lot. So I'd be okay with it if they insisted on putting him in the group. But by no means is he actually, you know, ready. It would be great, though, for him to be part of a group. That way he's not wrestling singles matches. He'll die a death. If you promote Corbin, you know, next week or even next month to the main roster, and it's just Baron Corbin, the lone wolf, he's going to die a fucking death. The only way to do it is to put him with other people like this. That could work. I saw somebody in our Facebook group. There's one other. I want to add one thing to this. I saw somebody in our Facebook group mention Adam Rose, the idea maybe of Adam Rose reverting back to Leo Kruger as a Wyatt family member. They mentioned this in the context of SummerSlam, if they do a six-man tag team match, if it's Reigns and Ambrose and maybe Sting. There's been a lot of rumors about Sting being involved in this in some way. I don't think they would injure Ambrose and keep him off the SummerSlam card altogether just to make it a tag match with Roman and Sting. That would suck for Dean. I could see a six-man tag, and then you need a third Wyatt family member. And unless Rowan is ready to come back at that point and makes a surprise return that night, this person was talking about why not have Adam Rose go back to Leo Kruger. And the Leo Kruger character seems like it would fit in quite well as a member of the Wyatt. I was never a Leo Kruger fan when he was on NXT. I hated the character. I thought it was boring. I didn't like it. I'm still not a fan of the Leo Kruger character. But that character, I think, would fit in quite well as a member of the Wyatt family. So if they're not doing anything with Adam Rose, which they're clearly not, same as with Sandow. If they wanted to do it, that's another direction they could go in. I don't know about adding him as like the fifth or sixth member. You might have to sacrifice, you know, somebody else to fit Kruger in there. But it gives these guys a chance to finally do something meaningful on TV. So I hope they're thinking along these lines and they're not going to come out of left field with some other stupid idea, because I think this is really good stuff here. I really do. I dig this idea. And Gavin from Newcastle, England. I wanted to get your opinion on JBL's title run in 2004-2005. I remember thinking at the time it really came out of the blue, but he had pretty good success with the APA and then split with Ron Simmons out of nowhere. All of a sudden, he's in the title picture. It's all the more surprising when you still had an active Kurt Angle, Big Show, Edge, and Booker T as viable heel champions on the SmackDown roster. What do you think Vince saw in him to give him such a long run with the strap? As a side note, can you please explain what happened in the fight between JBL and Joey Styles, as I love to hear about a bully getting their comeuppance? It was very sudden. Let's talk about the title run first. His title run was, you talk about it coming out of the blue, that's exactly what happened. 1 week he's the ass kicker with Farouk, and the next week he's J.R. Ewing with his cowboy hat wearing a suit. That's literally how quickly the transition happened. There were no promos, there were no vignettes. He was APA Bradshaw 1 week, and the next week he was JBL. I think they just had this sudden need to create a new heel to get the title off Eddie Guerrero because Eddie was not drawing as the champion. And Eddie was putting a lot of pressure on himself, which was not good for his sanity with his history of addiction and whatnot. He blamed himself. Whenever SmackDown did poorly or SmackDown house show didn't draw, which is unfair because it wasn't like it was all Eddie's fault. I mean, I know he was the champion, but it's not like it's 1987 and everything is banking on Hogan, okay, one guy. It's the brand. And I know also Eddie and JBL were friends. JBL has said that Eddie actually went to bat for him, really wanted to help get him over. So who knows? I mean, maybe Eddie had a hand in picking him to be the one to beat him for the championship. Maybe they were friends and Eddie, not politic, but, you know, pitched for John to have a bigger role, all the while having no idea that it would be JBL that he would drop his championship to. I don't know if Eddie had a direct hand in that or not, but it was a very sudden thing. The JBL-Joey Styles story is very simple, and it's 100% true. They did the tribute to the troops in Iraq. I think this goes back maybe about 6 or 7 years. JBL, who, to his credit, JBL was the one who started that whole tribute to the troops thing. It was his idea. He helped organize it and kind of pitched the idea, and it turned into a very nice thing, and he deserves, you know, at least some of the credit for that. But JBL also had a reputation back in the day for being a bully. He hazed people, he bullied people, he was a dick. And as he was known to do to people back in the day, he was hazing Joey Styles nonstop on that tour. He was being a bully, he was harassing him, and Joey just got sick and tired of his shit and punched him right in the face and gave him a black eye. And he did this in front of all the boys. After that, JBL didn't fuck with Joey Styles. So let that be a lesson to anybody out there being bullied. Stand up for yourself. Don't take shit from anyone. The thing is, though, if you did that in almost any profession, you'd be fired. You'd be fired on the spot. Probably arrested, too. In wrestling, that's the sort of thing that actually earns you respect and credibility. Plus, they were overseas in a war zone. So it's not like they were going to, the cops were not going to come arrest Joey Styles for assault. That wasn't going to happen. So you may not be able to get away with it, but Joey did. And JBL never did mess with him again after that. We'll end with this week's buy or sell. This week's buy or sell is a good one. Probably the best one yet. And it comes from Daryl in Hartford, Connecticut. Buy or sell. John Cena or Hiroshi Tanahashi? He says they are both poster boys of their respective brands. They each have numerous title reigns between them. They both have 5-star matches. They both have rivals and an opponent of equal stardom or talent. Randy Orton and Okada is the comparison that he makes. They both get massive responses from the audience, and they both have had lady issues. Buy or sell? Well, I don't know about that lady issues part, but okay. This may be the hardest one I've done yet. If I am judging this from the perspective of, okay, I'm a promoter, and who right now, I'm looking at this going, who would I want to build around? Would I want to build around John Cena? Would I want to build around Tanahashi? I'm going to go with John Cena. Because worldwide, he is a much bigger star, and I think he has many, and people may not want to hear this, but I think he has many years left if he wants to keep doing this. And he has given no indication that he wants to get out of wrestling. He loves wrestling. He loves WWE. He's a loyal guy. I could see him doing this for another 10, 12 years if he wants to. I mean, look, we got 50-year-old Undertaker, as broken down as we know he is. I mean, he looks good, but his body is just beaten to shit. 50 years old, doesn't look a day over 65, He's out there headlining SummerSlam. You don't think that could be John Cena 12 years from now? I know that's like a nightmare scenario for all the Cena haters out there, but it's very possible. If I'm judging this from the perspective of, as of right now, this moment, and going forward, who has the most value? I still got to go with John Cena. If we're talking who's the better wrestler, then I go with Tanahashi, hands down. I mean, there's no debate about that. But that's not what buy or sell is meant to be. These two guys are actually eerily similar. I was thinking about this. Some people have called Tanahashi the John Cena of Japan. I see some people in our Facebook group sometimes, they post that Tanahashi wins LOL meme, which gets a chuckle out of me. But it's true. I mean, when you look at these two guys, it's freaking eerie how much they mirror each other. They're both the same age, 38 years old. They both debuted right around the same time. They are both obviously very charismatic guys. WWE built itself throughout the 2000s around John Cena as its top guy. New Japan built itself up through much of the 2000s with Tanahashi as the top guy. Each guy has won their respective world titles more times than I can count. Both guys have gotten criticism for being relied on way too much and maybe sucking up all the oxygen on top for a little too long. Tanahashi can still go. John Cena is having the best, maybe one of the best, if not the best in-ring career of in-ring year, I should say, of his career. I think it's laughable, some of these people that are claiming that John Cena may be the wrestler of the year and throwing around terms like wrestler of the year for John Cena. I think that's ridiculous. But he's having a standout year. Business in WWE during Cena's run, still booming. They're still making money, but ratings and overall interest in the product is not anywhere close to where it was at its peak. And you could say the same thing about New Japan under Tanahashi. New Japan went through a really rough period for a few years, but with him on top and other guys too, like Okada and Nakamura, New Japan has experienced this rebirth of sorts, but it's still nowhere close to where they were at their peak. But here's the big difference between the two, and this is why I'm buying on John Cena and I'm selling on Hiroshi Tanahashi. If you take John Cena out of the equation, WWE is in a lot of trouble. They are in real trouble. And that's their fault. They put themselves in that position. They relied on this guy for so long, it's their own freaking fault. But there would be a noticeable dip in business. They would lose millions upon millions of dollars if John Cena was just gone. And they don't have anyone. They don't have anyone full-time. So I'm not counting Brock Lesnar. They have not done a good enough job of building anyone else up to the level of Cena to fill Cena's shoes when it comes to tickets, when it comes to merchandise, when it comes to ratings, and all those indicators, everything. It all takes a hit whenever Cena's not around. That's one of the rumors about the Kevin Owens deal. When Kevin Owens beat John Cena clean at Elimination Chamber within a few weeks, some of those business indicators, I guess merch and maybe house show tickets and whatnot, they went down, and it spooked WWE, which now had a decision to make. You either stay the course and build up Kevin Owens and bring in other guys and build them up and just accept the fact that, look, in the short term, business may take a hit, Cena's going to be okay, and we're going to get a couple of new stars out of it. Instead, they went with option B. They panicked, clearly, and John Cena, I think, has won pretty much every single match since then. So they went back to their tried and true. That was the decision that they made. I think it's the wrong decision, but they want to make money now, and so they got scared, and that's what they did. Fine. But like I said, it's WWE's fault for booking him as this unstoppable force at the expense of all these younger, newer guys. With Tanahashi, if Tanahashi had to retire tomorrow, okay, let's say because of his bad back, he's got a bad back, it would be a very big blow to New Japan, but I think they would be able to sustain the hit because they have a handful of other guys on top right now who are at that same level. I don't think Tanahashi is looked at anymore as being at like Tanahashi level and then everybody's underneath him. I think on that same level, you've got Okada. I think Okada's right there neck and neck. Maybe some people would even say Okada's the biggest star in New Japan, that he's even surpassed Tanahashi. You've got Okada, you've got Nakamura, you've got AJ Styles, maybe even Kota Ibushi. I don't think he's quite at that level yet, but Kota Ibushi is a younger guy, great wrestler. The women love him. He may not be at that level yet, but if he's not, he's pretty close. they have guys that can step up and be the top guys without all of their fans just completely abandoning ship. So I think in that respect, New Japan has done a better job than WWE has of creating multiple guys at the top, as opposed to WWE, who's always obsessed with having the guy, right? Who's the face of the company? Who gives a fuck who the face of the company is? Why? What was there some law in their universe that says thou shall not create more than one guy? Is it really that horrible to have two guys, three guys? I mean, there was a point in WWE where Austin and Rock both were the guy, and they did pretty well back then. They didn't put all their eggs in one basket, which is good, too, that they didn't do that, because then Austin got hurt. Now, can you imagine if in 1999 and 2000, they had the same mentality they have now, they put all their eggs in the Stone Cold basket, they had other guys who were kind of over, but not nearly at that level, and then Austin says, I need neck surgery, I'm going to be out for a year. How fucked would that company have been? But they were very lucky, because they had The Rock, and Triple H was on the ascent, and Triple H and The Rock, they both elevated each other's game. In 2000, those guys were tearing it up. 2000 was... Look, if 2000 wasn't their best year, it was one of their best years, and Austin was there for only a tiny part of it. They had The Rock, they had Triple H, they had Mankind, they had The Undertaker. It helped when they had Jericho, but it helped when Benoit and Eddie and those guys jumped over because they could be the workhorses. They had a good core of guys, but at the top, they still had The Rock, and to a lesser extent, Triple H. So they were able to survive. Business, maybe ratings went down a little bit, but they had a damn good year in 2000. Imagine if they had the same mentality then that they had now, and they had nobody else, and Austin went away, business would have tanked. Business didn't tank in 2000. Didn't tank. It tanked in 2001 after Austin turned heel and WCW died and they didn't have any competition anymore. That kind of changed the game. But they were able to survive just fine. And I have no faith that if John Cena went away tomorrow, they would... I mean, look, they'll survive. They're not going to go out of business. But they're going to take a massive, massive hit. And I think New Japan, what they've done is they've insulated themselves from something like that happening. So that really, to me, illustrates the power of John Cena. He is more important right now of the two, and I see him having many... more good years on top, which I know, again, makes people want to vomit, but that's just the way it is. I like them both. I have to buy on Cena and sell on Tanahashi, and that's, you know, and that, let me be clear, before all the haters come at me with their pitchforks, I'm not saying that John Cena is a better wrestler than Hiroshi Tanahashi, although what makes a great wrestler is more than just, you know, technical ability. There's a lot that goes into that. And I think Tanahashi has that. That's why I say, not just because of his matches, I think he is, you know, a much better wrestler than John Cena. But, you know, if we're talking purely matches, like I said, Tanahashi blows him away. And Cena's had some great matches with great opponents, but Tanahashi has had more of them. But this is buy or sell. Buy or sell on who I feel has more value at the moment and in the future. These guys are a lot closer to the end of their careers than they are the beginning of them, but I think John Cena is going to go longer than Tanahashi will, and I think he's more valuable to his respective company. I think that strong style is going to work against Tanahashi. The guy has just beaten his body to hell over the years. He's worked a much harder style in-ring than John Cena has. Sooner or later, that catches up to you. So that's why I'm going with Cena over Tanahashi. Hopefully I've done a good job of at least explaining myself before people, you know, stab the pitchfork into my midsection. So if you have a suggestion for buy or sell, email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com, and I might just use it on the show. You could also keep emailing me, thesolemonster@gmail.com is the email address for all other questions and inquiries, business inquiries. Follow me on Twitter, @Solomonster. We're very close to 11,000 followers on there, so I thank you for that. Don't forget, we have got a store on ProWrestlingTees.com. 20 different t-shirts. You can have them shipped pretty much anywhere in the world up to a size 5XL for all of the shirts in the store. ProWrestlingTees.com/SolomonsterSoundsOff. Get yourself a Sound Off shirt. I said last week, if any of you guys are going to the NXT show in Brooklyn or SummerSlam, I mean, at this point, I'm not going to be at SummerSlam, although that's subject to change. But I will be at the NXT show. I'd love to see you. Say hello. Would love to see you wearing a Sound Off shirt. So if you're going to order one to get it in time to wear at the show, now would be the time to do it. It can sometimes take 2 to 3 weeks to get the shirts. So head on over there and check out what we got. Also, don't forget, take advantage of that Audible offer. The Daniel Bryan book is out, and you can get it right now for free. You don't have to pay $25 for it or buy the paperback in the store. You can get the free audiobook version using our Audible trial link, audibletrial.com/Solomonster. Sign up for the trial, cash in your free book. If you're not happy with the trial, you can always cancel. You won't be billed. And the boogeyman won't come and steal your book away from you. You get to keep it. And again, I'm hearing great things about the book. I do hope to read it soon and get a review up on YouTube. So audibletrial.com/Solomonster for that. We are done here. This was a much longer show than I think I had originally figured it would be 3 days ago when I was planning this show. But stuff happens. That's just the way it goes. I'm sure there'll be more Hogan developments this week. We'll get into that next week. Until then, be well, stay safe. We'll be back for 394 next weekend, which may be going up a day early. I have a family function next Sunday that I will be attending, which is going to be most interesting because I'm actually going to be seeing family members that I have not seen in, I'd say, 18 years probably. It was kind of a falling out on my father's side of the family, and that was his decision to not associate with that side of the family anymore. And I was a kid, so what was, you know, what was I going to say? And things have happened, and we're actually going to see people that we haven't seen in a long time, and I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be weird, but I'm happy it's happening. But it's happening on Sunday, which is my recording day, so it may go up a little bit earlier than usual, so you might want to watch out for that. But until then, take care of yourselves, and we will see you right back here again next week. Adios.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off.
Watch these promos on NXT. Watch Raw. Watch a Randy Orton promo or a Sheamus promo. They never, ever look at the camera. It's because that's what they teach them now. You are not allowed to look into the camera. I think it's just completely idiotic. Why are their eyes not on me? That's how interviews always work. They're talking to me. They're speaking to us. They're supposed to be speaking to the fans. Maybe that's part of the reason why these people can't make a connection with the audience. Because they don't fucking look at us.
Solomonster Sounds Off.
Since 2007, the Solomonster Sounds Off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster Sound Off.